listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Well, 10 o'clock Tuesday, you know what that means. It's time for another fun-filled installment of Radio Vault. Today is no exception to the festivities we have in store for you. We're going to kick it off with a one-hour version of Lux Radio Theater because that's the only version that they did. From 1941, starring Shirley Temple, we'll be hearing Captain January. Then we'll get you in the mood for the season ahead. We have lined up for you an episode of Our Miss Brooks, the Easter Outfit episode from April of 1949. Then we're going to lay on you a triple play of Jack Benny. We're going to go to 1947 when he did his show from New York. Normally he did it from the West Coast, but he did travel around the country from time to time. We'll be hearing the episode featuring Al Jolson, the famous 30s singer. And we've got other episodes from Jack Benny from 1953, two consecutive episodes, one featuring Tony Curtis, and another one where he actually spends a good part of the radio show preparing for his television show. That and much, much less, boys and girls, it's time for Radio Vault. And we go back now to January 27 of 1941. The child star, Shirley Temple.
Nuts presents Hollywood. Lux Radio Theater brings you Shirley Temple, Charles Wininger, and Gene Lockhart in Captain January. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. It's you who make stars, and you made Shirley Temple a star long before she knew what a star was. A few years ago, when she was just learning the mysteries of spelling, which I've never been able to solve, she tried her newfound knowledge on signs along the street. Much to her astonishment, the letters on a theater marquee spelled her own name, and she couldn't imagine how it got there. Tonight that name shines on our marquee, with the title of the play, Captain January, adapted from one of Shirley's most successful pictures for 20th Century Fox. It's the story of a little girl named Star, and a lovable old salt named Captain January, and of what happened when fate tried to pull them apart. But with Charles Wininger and Gene Lockhart on Shirley's side, fate has a tough assignment. Of course, we can't please all the people all the time, but I'm inclined to think we'll hit a new high tonight. And who knows, perhaps everyone in our audience will imitate the lady who has just written us saying, "Thank you very much for last week's play and for a wonderful team of stars. I enjoyed them immensely. Now we're off for the New England shore and the stirring drama of Captain January. You'll hear Shirley Temple as the little girl whose name is Star, Charles Wininger as Captain January, and Gene Lockhart as Captain Nazaro. The curtain rises on Act One. In from the northeast roars a biting winter gale, lashing the rocky coast of Maine, whipping the dull green sea into a white frenzy of foam. Somewhere in this mad mountainous world, a sailing vessel rolls and pitches, her decks awash beneath the heavy seas. In a last desperate plea for mercy, she lifts her spar to the black sky. But mercy is denied. With a groan and a shudder, the gallant craft slips downward to her grave.
Shipwreck! Shipwreck! The 100-dock Cape ship is gone down on all hands!
January wants you. He found a small boat in the sea just off Great Rock. He dragged it up on the beach.
You mean a boat from the Huntress?
Yes, sir. And there was someone in it.
Where is he now, at Great Rock?
Yes, sir. I'll take you there, sir.
Never mind.
I'll find him myself. Captain January, where are you? January.
Yeah, over here. Take care over them rocks there.
Heaven sent you wanted me.
I did, sir. But it's too late. She's gone.
She? Who?
A passenger off the Huntress. Been adrift half the day in an open boat. Come over this way, sir. There she is. May heaven rest her soul.
This woman's been dead for hours.
Aye, sir. Died saving the little one she did in her arms around her. Keeping the warmth of life in her.
The little one? Was there someone else?
Look here, sir. Under the tarpaulin. Warm and snug.
Why, it's a child.
A baby, sir. Smiling like a little angel. That's the way she was when I took her from her mother's arms.
Captain, we'll have to bring this child up to the village at once.
Please, sir. If it's all the same to you, I'll just bring her along to my place.
Your place? I hardly think a lighthouse is the proper place for a child, Captain.
Why not, sir? I'm cozy up there, and you see... Well, sir... It's like she was delivered into my hands. Like the Lord might have asked me to take care of her for a while. To sort of watch over her until he'd made his plans for her.
You're a good man, Captain. All right. Take her along to the lighthouse. If anyone inquires after her in the village, I'll let you know.
Thank you, sir. Up you go, child.
Wait. Did you find anything that might give us a clue as to who this child is?
No, sir. Only this locket. It was held tight in the woman's hand. And that reminds me, she'll have to have a name, won't she? What kind of a name is there for a baby girl washed up on a stormy beach? With the weather clearing as she comes to shore, and the evening star peeping out from behind the clouds. Aye, that's it. Star. That's your name, child. We'll call you Star.
You hear that? It's 6:00.
6:30. Huh? Time for him, Cap. What'll you have for breakfast?
What'll I have for breakfast? 6:30, almost lunchtime.
And you can stop pretending you're angry. I don't believe it. Sit down, Cap. Coffee coming up.
Say, ain't you forgetting something?
I don't think so. Let's see. I made my bed. I brushed my teeth. Oh, it's my birthday. Where's my present?
No breakfast yet, and she wants her present. How do you know you got a present?
You always give me a present.
I give you a spank for every year, too. When'll you have that?
Not now, Cap. After breakfast. I feel tougher after breakfast.
All right, you can pick your own time. But don't you go slipping any shingles in the seat of your britches like the last time. That spanking hurt me more than it did you.
Honest, Cap. I didn't know there was a nail in it. It's been a long time, hasn't it, Cap?
A long time?
I mean, since you and me shipped together.
9 years today, Star. That's why you're having your birthday.
But I must be more than 9 years old.
Aye, maybe 11 or so. I don't know exactly.
For all we know, maybe I'm 30, huh?
Maybe. But it's highly improbable.
Cap, what did I look like when you fished me out of the water?
I had to wring you out and hang you up to dry.
Tell me all about the storm again?
Now. You've heard about that storm every birthday.
But it gets to be a bigger storm every time you tell it. How many miles did you swim towing the lifeboat with me in your teeth?
I had the tow rope in my teeth, not you.
Last time you told me, it was me.
Well, you're a year older now. Star, do you ever get lonely here?
Lonely?
It ain't much of a life for a lass living in a lighthouse.
Who else
No
would
company?
I want?
Huh? Why, I was thinking maybe this ain't the right kind of a life for a youngster. Maybe you ought to go away somewhere. Would you like to, Star?
No, I wouldn't. But if you say that just once more, I will go away. And I won't come back either. Oh, Cap, you're always talking about my going away. Don't you know by now that I'm never going to leave here?
I'd just like to make sure once in a while that I'm doing right. That you really want to stay, that's all.
Oh, I do. I do. And that's the end of it. Understand?
All right, honey. That's the end of it. Here now. I'll let you have your birthday present.
Oh, Cap, what is it?
There. You like it?
Why, it's a locket. Oh, it's beautiful. Where'd you get it, Cap?
It was in your poor mother's hand the night I found you. There's a picture inside. Here, I'll open it for you.
I can do it. Cap, is that my mother?
I reckon it is, lass. Your mother and you, it must have been taken soon after you were born.
She was very beautiful, wasn't she?
Aye, and you're a lot like her. I've saved it all these years till I thought you were big enough to know what it was and to take care of it.
I will, Cap. I'm going to keep this forever and ever. Thanks, Cap. Well, my mother was very beautiful, and Cap says I look just like her. That's funny, isn't it, Imogene? I mean, me being beautiful. But you never can tell, can you, Imogene? I might grow up to be beautiful. After all, I'll bet you weren't so much to look at when you were my age. But you're beautiful now, Imogene, and I love you very much. Well, what do you say? That's better.
Star, are you finished with the milking yet?
In a minute, Cap. Hurry up, Imogene. Cap's waiting.
If you hurry, I'll let you go into the village.
The village?
There's a few things we need from the store. Would you like to go?
Sure, I would. Right there, Cap. Imogene, will you please cooperate a little? I gotta go into the village.
Morning, Star.
Morning, Captain Jarrett.
Hello there, Star.
Captain Nasro.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. Say, are you coming over to the lighthouse tonight, Captain Nasro?
Well, don't know. Janet ain't invited me yet.
Well, I'm inviting you right now. You come on over. Cap and I are having a surprise party all by ourselves.
All right. But you better warn him I'm coming.
Don't worry. I'll tell him to behave. See you tonight, Captain.
I'll be there.
Morning, Mr. Carp.
Morning, Star. What can I do for you?
We need another case of brass polish. Better send it over right away. And don't forget what we get off for being government.
Be there tomorrow, Star.
Tomorrow? We need it today.
Well, I'll try, but there's a lot of summer folks up here already keeping me hopping. I'll do the best I can.
All right. Say, how much are these lollipops?
3 cents a piece.
3 cents? What about the government discount?
Oh, sorry. 2 cents for you, Star.
Thanks. So long, Mr. Carr.
So long.
Oh, Mr. Carr.
Yes, Miss Morgan?
Who was that little girl?
Star? Why, she's Captain January's girl. He's the lighthouse keeper.
I see. I wonder why I haven't seen her in school.
Well, I guess the teacher who was here before wasn't very strict about things like that.
Yes, I know. That's why she isn't here now. I think I'll go and have a talk with that child.
And then she tried to make me go right along to school, and I said I wouldn't. Well, I was very polite, Cap, honest, but I said I had to go home.
Good for you. Now go on, what happened then?
Well, one thing led to another, and the next thing I know, she had me by the ear, dragging me along the street.
She did, eh? Well, what did you do?
Well, one thing led to another thing, and the next thing you know, why, she sat down.
On the chair?
No, on the street.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
I see. She tripped, eh? Well, what'd she say then?
Well, I didn't wait to hear. I didn't think I'd better. I just ran.
Good idea. Well, forget about it.
She can't do anything mean to us, can she?
Of course not. Remember, I work for the government. I am the government here.
Yes, but I think she's government, too.
Well, don't worry. This is your birthday.
All right, Cap.
Who's that?
Open up and find out.
Oh, it's Captain Nasro.
Nasro.
Come in, Captain.
Evening.
Blind my eyes. Can't I even give a birthday party around here without you barging in?
Pipe down, you cattywampus. I didn't come to see you. Here, honey. Here's your present.
Oh, thank you. Look, Captain. Another present.
Present.
It ain't much, honey.
I bet it ain't.
Oh, look. It's a doll.
A doll. Well, well, a doll.
Well, well, what of it?
Oh, it's beautiful, Captain Nazro. Thank you very much. Cap, you're going to invite Captain Nazro to stay to the party, aren't you?
Well, I wasn't counting on it, but since he's here, sit down, Nazro.
Good. I'll fix the place for him.
Whether you was counting on it or not, I'm here. And I'm going to stay for a while.
Oh, you are, are you?
Yes, I are. It's time I was doing a little inspecting around this here lighthouse.
They must have been daft in Washington appointing you an inspector. Why, you don't know the difference between a telescope and a tar barrel.
The way you handle them, I guess there ain't any. Look at that brass work.
Well, what's the matter with it?
It's dirty.
Yeah, it is not. The brass was clean till you rubbed your dirty gloves on it.
Why, you fog-bound old derelict. If you wasn't my host, I'd fire you right now.
Yeah, and if I wasn't, if you wasn't my guest, I'd quit.
Come and get it, sailors. You know, it's nice to see you two getting on for a change.
Yeah.
Here, Captain Nazro, you sit right there.
Thank you, Star.
And you here, Cap.
Say, what's that thing there?
What do you think it is?
It's a cake, Captain Nazro. Isn't it nice?
Right pretty.
Cap made it all himself.
Oh, he did. Then I guess I'll just eat the candles.
Now listen here, you no good deckhop.
Cap, stop it. Now you sit right down and behave yourself. Come in. The door's open.
Good evening.
Oh, my goodness. Cap, it's Stormy Weather, the school teacher.
Which one of you is Captain January, please?
I'm Captain January.
I'm Mrs. Morgan, the new teacher here.
So sit down, ma'am.
Thank you. Captain January, why isn't this child in school?
Well, I was aiming to send her next year.
What you are aiming to do is of no importance. We have a compulsory education law in this state, so this child is old enough.
How does she know how old I am? We don't even know ourselves.
Don't be impudent.
But I didn't mean to be impudent.
Captain January, this child is being brought up entirely without control. She's rude, disrespectful. She's being raised like an ignorant little heathen.
Now, hold on, hold on.
Law, you might remember that this child is adopted. And it is well within the power of the school authorities to have her taken from you and sent to an institution if you fail to raise her properly.
Taken from me? Why?
Just a minute. Mrs. Morgan, I don't hold none with this mildewed old pirate. But when you say Star's been brought up ignorant, you're talking through your crow's nest. Why, she reads writing and writes down reading better than any 11-year-old on this coast.
What do you mean, better than any 11-year-old? There ain't a 13 or 14-year-old here from here to Newfoundland that knows as much as Star.
Oh, nor any 15-year-old either.
Or,
as that goes.
Or 16 or 17.
Say, maybe I am 30.
You talk about neglect, Mrs. Morgan. Why, I've been learning her from the best two books there is, the Bible and Boddish.
And just what is Boddish, please?
You never heard of Boddish? Why, it's one of the greatest books ever written, American Practical Navigation by Nathaniel Boddish.
Navigation. Fine reading for a girl of her age.
Any objection to the Bible?
Let me tell you, Captain.
And let me tell you, ma'am. There ain't better reading in the world than the Bible and the Boddish. They both learn you to steer a straight course.
I didn't come here to discuss reading matter. Please have a report to the schoolhouse for an examination next Tuesday. The school board will determine whether or not she's been neglected. And since you seem to think she has the intelligence of a child of 13, we'll call her 13 and give her the test for that age.
Wait, maybe I'm only 10 or so.
Well, I stand on 13.
Very well. Tuesday morning, please. Good night.
Cap, what was she talking about? An institution.
No, don't worry your head about that. Nazra.
Yeah?
I'd like to speak to you for a minute.
But Cap... The party.
It's something about the light, Star. We'll be right down. Come on up to the light, Nazra.
Well, you certainly are a lubber, January. What was the idea of insisting that Star was as smart as a girl of 13?
Well, she is, ain't she?
Sure, but why make it tough for yourself?
I reckon I did put my foot in it.
I'm afraid you did. After all, Star doesn't even belong to you, you know.
Doesn't belong to me?
That's what I said. You got no legal right to her. You never even adopted her.
She's more than adopted. She's part of me.
That's all right. But taint the law. When you fished her out of the water, you should have turned her over to the authorities. Or tried to find out if she'd had any folks anywhere.
I did try.
Yes, you did.
Well, I tried for a while. I couldn't keep trying forever. Anyway, she has no folks. They're all dead.
Are they? How do you know?
Well, they never come for her. No one's ever asked for her.
And you're just hoping they never will.
What business is it of yours? She's mine. She's mine. And nobody's going to ever take her from me.
Lobsters! Get your lobsters! Lobsters here! Right in the water!
Lobsters! Fresh lobsters! Baby lobsters! 15 cents!
Hello! Hello!
Lobsters! Fresh lobsters! Baby lobsters!
What have you got there? Lobsters?
Oh no, they're shrimp, but don't tell anybody. Lobsters!
You can't fool me! They're lobsters!
All right, they're lobsters. Go away, will you? Get your lobsters! Fresh lobsters!
You live in this place!
Lobsters! Fresh from the water!
I said you live in this place!
Lobsters! 15 cents!
I come from New York!
Tourist! Lobsters! Baby lobsters!
Do these things bite?
Certainly they bite.
I don't believe it.
Look, Sonny, go away, please.
I want to see if they bite.
Well, if you have to, you have to. Go ahead. See? They bite. Lobsters! Fresh lobsters! How about a nice lobster, lady? 15 cents.
No, thank you.
Best you ever tasted. Just take one home and try it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but I'm living at the hotel. You see, I'm a tourist, too.
Oh, I didn't mean that. He was just getting fresh.
I know. I was standing over there watching you. I wonder if you'd tell me something.
Sure, what?
I wonder if you'd tell me where you got that locket you're wearing.
That? Oh, Cap gave me that.
Cap?
Yes, he's my father. Captain January.
Your father? I see.
Laura? Laura, where have you been?
Oh, come here, Bruce. Have you some change? I want to buy some lobsters.
Lobsters? What for?
It's all right, lady. I don't want you to buy them if you can't use them.
Oh, real little native, aren't you?
No, sir. I wasn't born here, if that's what you mean.
You weren't? Oh, where were you born?
I don't know. That sounds sort of funny, doesn't it?
But you said your father...
Cap? Oh, well, he's not really my father. I just call him that. You see, he found me and... Well, what are you looking at me that way for?
Go on, dear. What were you saying?
I wasn't saying anything. I gotta go home now. I'm late. Excuse me.
Wait, your lobsters.
They'll be all right. Bye.
Bruce.
Laura, what is it? You look as if... Laura, are you ill?
Bruce, listen to me. That child. I must know who she is. Find out for me. I must know her name.
Mr. DeMille and our stars, Shirley Temple, Charles Wininger, and Gene Lockhart, return in a moment with Act Two of Captain January. But now, here's our producer, Mr. DeMille. Act Two of Captain January, with Shirley Temple as star, Charles Wininger as Captain January, and Gene Lockhart as Captain Nasro. A few days have passed, and Tuesday has rolled round. Fateful Tuesday, when Star is to appear before the school board for her examination. She's told Captain January nothing of her meeting with the lady on the mainland, so the captain's only worry is how to help Star pass. Alone in the lighthouse, he studies a book of grammar, but his brow is furrowed with deep lines as he struggles with the conjugation of the verb to be.
I was, you were, he was, we were, you were, they was, were. That can't be right. Something's all mixed up here. Oh, why didn't I go to school instead of running away to sea?
Morning, Cap.
Oh, hello, hello.
What are you doing, Cap?
Oh, nothing.
I thought you were going to help me with my examination.
Well, I am. Let's see.
How about starting off with a little grammar?
Grammar? Oh, grammar? Oh. No. They won't ask you anything about grammar. We'll begin with arithmetic. Recite the multiplication by five table.
Cap, that's kid stuff.
Hmm?
You've got to make it tougher than that.
All right. We'll do the seven table. Go ahead.
Cap, that's for babies. 8 years old, Cap.
8 years old? 8 years old and they know the multiplication by seven table?
Sure they do.
Never heard of it until I was 23.
Well, all right, all right. We'll skip the arithmetic. Now, let's get on to geography.
Oh, geography. I like that.
Now, here we go. Now, if you were sailing from Boston Harbor to China, to what point of the compass would you turn her nose on the second day out?
Cap, I don't think that's the way they ask them.
No, why not?
Well, Captain Nazro said...
Nazro, Nazro, always Nazro.
Did I hear my name mentioned?
Hello, Captain. Sit down.
What do you want?
Nothing with you, you desiccated old crawfish. But I thought I'd come and help Star get ready for the examination. You being so illiterate.
Me illiterate? I can spell you down, write you down, read you down, and figure you down. And I can do it with my hands tied behind my back.
No, you couldn't. You need your fingers to count on.
Is that so? I'll bet you can't count over 10 without taking your shoes off.
Look, fellas, I don't like to interfere with your fun, but fighting isn't going to help me pass this test.
She's right, but this might help.
What is it?
Well, you see, Star, I figured it might help things along if we knew the questions they was going to ask. Now, this here is the examination paper. I borrowed it from the schoolroom.
Captain Nazro, that's cheating.
It is?
Of course it is. Isn't it, Cap?
Well, yes, it's a very delicate point. We'll talk about it later on. Let's see that paper now, sir.
Yeah.
Now, Star, the first question. Here. If a field is 87 and a half rods long and 43 and a quarter rods wide, what is the length of the diagonal drawn from the northeast corner to the southwest corner? Prove it.
Well... what's the answer?
What's the answer, Nazra?
Well, how much is a rod? How many fathoms?
Would it do you any good to know?
No.
Well, then keep quiet. prove that heat expands.
Wait a minute. What's that?
That's the second question.
But we didn't get the answer to the first one.
Well, we're skipping the first one. Prove that heat expands.
Prove that heat expands. What does it mean?
Why, it means... prove that heat makes things bigger.
Well, let's see. Sure it does. Look, it's hot in the summertime, isn't it? Well, the days are longer in summer than they are in winter. Well?
Well, that's it.
Sounds logical to me.
100%.
Say, this isn't so tough. What's number three?
Write down from memory the quality of mercy speech from the Merchant of Venice.
The quality of mercy is not strained.
Is that all?
I think it goes on from there.
Maybe, but my memory doesn't.
This is a put-up job. That old hatchet face of a schoolteacher is trying to frame us.
Hey, let me see that paper.
There's no child of 13 could answer this stuff. I can't answer it myself.
Wait. I think I've made a mistake.
What?
This is a high school examination.
High school? So you can't even steal proper.
I didn't know. I picked it up in the schoolroom. It said examination. How was I to know there's different tests for different ages?
That's right. How was you to know? You'd never pass a 13-year-old test, did you?
I could have passed one.
Maybe when you were full grown.
Look, fellas, we're not getting any place. I've got to leave for school soon.
Oh, say, hey, I was thinking. With me telling that Morgan woman that I was teaching Star from the Bible... that's pretty apt to be some questions about the Bible.
Well, there ain't many children as up in the book as she is.
I know, but Star, what are the four Gospels?
Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
Fine. Now, remember that story I read to you last week about the prodigal son?
Uh-huh. And the father said, bring out the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and be merry.
Correct. But everybody wasn't merry, Star. There was a brother there and neighbors. Now... who was sorry the prodigal son came back?
The fatted calf.
Star!
Ladies and gentlemen of the school board, I think you know why we are here today. This child, Star January, I believe they call her, is to take the 13-year-old test. Sit over there, please.
Thank you.
We also have another student here, a little gentleman from New York. Gerald is going to summer school this year. Sit down, Gerald, dear.
Oh, all right.
Judge Hardlow.
Yes?
Judge, I've invited you here for a very special reason. Mm-hmm. I don't believe this little girl is being brought up properly. But I let you judge that for yourself. You'll know what to do, I'm sure.
I think so. Begin the examination, Mrs. Morgan.
Now, children, first we'll have an oral test. On the blackboard, you will notice a drawing of 8 fishing schooners.
Excuse me, but they are schooners, Mrs. Morgan. They're catches.
What's that?
You said schooners, but they're really catches.
I don't believe that makes any difference.
Oh, but it does. You see, a schooner carries its mainmast midships, and a catch is more like a yawl. You see...
That should be enough, please.
Yes, ma'am.
On the board, we have 8 catches. If 4 could carry a load of 100 tons of fish, and 4 could carry twice as much, how many tons could they all carry half-filled? Well, Star?
Well, in the first place, I don't believe you could get 100 tons of fish on a catch.
That's not the question.
But the boat would sink. They couldn't carry anything.
Be quiet.
Yes, ma'am.
Gerald, do you know the answer?
Half-filled, the 8 boats could carry 600 tons of fish.
Not on top of the water.
No muttering, please. Thank you, Gerald. Now, Star, will you please define a relative pronoun?
What, ma'am?
A relative pronoun. Surely you know that.
No, ma'am.
Relative pronoun is a pronoun that connects 2 clauses and has its antecedents in the other clause.
Very good, Gerald.
Wow.
And now we'll have a test of words and power of description. Gerald, will you please tell us, in your own words, the story of one of William Shakespeare's plays?
Well, once there was a man named, Romeo. And there was a girl, Juliet.
Go on, dear.
Well, her family was called,
The Capulets.
The Capulets. And his family were named,
Montague.
Star, will you please stop annoying Gerald?
I'm not annoying him. I just want to help him.
Do you? And just what do you know of the story of Romeo and Juliet?
Oh, we got it over at the lighthouse. I read it twice.
And you understood it, of course.
Oh, sure. You see, these Capulets and these Montagues, they hated each other like poison.
Never mind.
So Romeo and Juliet, they couldn't meet. So they met in the garden, sort of on the fly.
I beg your pardon?
The balcony, you know. Well, they couldn't get married on account of the old folks weren't on speaking terms. So this Juliet, she takes a drug and knocks herself cold.
Please.
So what happens? So they stick her in a box and ship her off to a vault. It's as cold as a herring in there. And Romeo thinks she's a gunner. Just then, a fella named Paris walks in, and they get into a scrap.
Just a moment.
What a battle. Romeo stabs Paris. Paris stabs Romeo.
Will you please?
Romeo stabs Paris. It's a fight to the finish, and the next thing you know, Paris is on the floor, stabbed through the skittles.
Ah! What was that?
The skittles. So then Romeo...
Stop it at once.
But that's not the end yet. Then Romeo...
Be quiet. Now, Judge Hardrow, you see what I mean.
I see.
You see the kind of bringing up she's had? What are we going to do with her?
Put her in the 8th grade. She's wonderful.
Eighth grade, he says. Put her in the 8th grade. Here, Nazareth, have some more cider.
Thank you.
Pretty good for a fellow that never had much book learning.
What's book learning got to do with cider?
I ain't talking about cider. I'm talking about educating Star so good that she jumps right into the 8th grade.
You educating her? Why, you couldn't get into the 3rd grade yourself. It was the things I learned that put her through.
Why, you... Who is it?
It's Winthrop, Captain.
The minister.
Oh, come in, sir, come in.
Morning, Captain.
Morning, sir. Come in and sit down.
Thank you. Morning, Nazareth.
Morning, Mr. Winthrop.
What brings you all the way out here, Mr. Winthrop? If it's Star you came to see, she's in school. 8th grade.
I came to see you, January. In a way, I'm glad that Star isn't here.
Huh?
It's about her that I came to speak to you.
Well, what is it? Is it bad news?
Bad news and good. It depends on the way you look at it.
Go on.
Captain, a lady came to my house yesterday. A lady and a gentleman. Their name is Easton. They're visitors here. They asked me a lot about Star, about where she came from and how long ago. I told them about the night you found her on the beach.
You told them?
We talked for a long time, Captain. And I told them I would bring them out here tonight. You see, they want to take Star. They want to bring her to Boston to give her a home there.
Why? Why?
Because from what they told me, I have no doubt that Star is Mrs. Easton's niece.
And all we heard was that my sister had been lost in a shipwreck. When we came back to America, We tried to learn more about it, but they told us that everyone had been lost. Then we came up here. When I saw the child, I almost knew then. She looked so much like my sister. And then the locket. I know she's my niece, Captain January. She's my sister's child.
And what if she is?
Captain.
What if she is, I say? What have you done for her? Did you take her out of the sea, raging like the devils let loose, and death itself howling for the child? Did you take her from her mother's arms and swear to the Lord has helped in saving her, to do as should be done by her? Have you prayed and worked and sweated for her and lived in fear someday she'd be taken from you? Have you?
Captain January.
I asked your pardon, ma'am.
Please believe me. I know what this means to you. And if it weren't for the child's own good, I wouldn't ask you to let me take her.
We can give her everything she wants, Captain. A home, schooling, and more important, I think we can make her happy.
For the child's own good. There's a thought, isn't it? There's something to hold on to. You say you can prove that she's your niece.
We have the passenger list from the Huntress. The mother and child were both registered.
And then there's the locket. There was a picture in it. My sister and her baby, taken when she was a year old. My sister was wearing a white dress, smiling and looking down at the child. Is that picture still there?
Yes, it's there.
I don't think there's any question that Mrs. Easton is Star's aunt, Captain.
No, there's no question.
Then you'll let us take her.
The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. It's his will, then. But I'll ask you to do it easy. For it'll be sudden-like for the girl. And she ain't used to being took sudden. My ways being slow.
We'll be very careful, Captain.
Cap, where are you? Cap, I...
Come in, Star, come in. This is Mrs. Easton, and this is Mr. Easton.
Hello, Star.
Hello.
You remember me, don't you?
Sure. I met you on the docks one day. You were going to buy some lobsters from me.
That's right.
Well, I guess you folks want to talk. I'll go on upstairs.
Oh, please don't go. You see, we want to talk to you.
What about?
Star, do you remember my asking about that locket you were wearing? May I see it now?
I haven't got it.
Where is it, Star?
I haven't got it.
I see.
Star, you keep the locket in the box over there, don't you? I think you'd better get it for us, Star.
Why does she want it? Why does she look at me like that?
Because this lady is your aunt, Star.
My aunt?
Your own kin, darling.
I haven't any kin. You know that. I haven't anybody except you. Tell her to go away. I don't want anybody looking at me the way she does. I don't belong to her. I belong to you.
Easy, easy, darling. Helm steady now.
Star, your aunt wants to take you to live with her. Through the providence of God, she's been led here to you. And she feels it her duty to claim you in the name of your parents.
I won't go with her. I've lived here ever since I can remember. She's got no right to make me leave. I won't go, do you hear? I won't go! Cap, why don't you say something? Don't you hear? They're trying to take me away.
They've a right to you, child.
A right to me? Is that all you have to say? Do you want me to go? Are you tired of me?
Well, honey, I'm an old man now, a very old man, and an old man likes quiet, you see, and, well, I'd be quieter myself, and so maybe it's all for the best.
You're lying to me. You never said anything like that to me before. You used to ask me all the time if I was lonesome here. All you thought about was me, and I'd tell you I'd never go away from you, and then you'd be happy, and now... And now
I tell you that I'm needing rest and quiet as suiting to an old man. I've kept you here for 9 whole years, and what thanks do I get? What thanks for all the years of work I put in to bring you up decent, hanging on me and hanging on me. And if you want me to say it right out, then I will. I want you to go off with those folks and let me alone, let me alone.
You feel about me?
I do.
All right, then. I'll go. I'll go and I'll never come back. Never. Never.
Oh.
Oh, may God forgive me for the things I said to the child. May God forgive me.
After a short intermission, Mr. DeMille and Shirley Temple, Charles Wininger, and Gene Lockhart will return for Act Three of Captain January. We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Curtain rises on the third act of Captain January. It's dawn of the next day. On the rocky beach near the lighthouse, Captain January stands looking out at the angry sea. All night long, he's walked the path between the rocks and the lighthouse gate. His hair is rumpled by the wind, his eyes bright and feverish. From the road comes Captain Nasro to stand quietly beside him.
It's fixing up to storm.
Aye.
Glass been dropping all night. They blowing a gale by evening.
Evening. They'll be coming for her then. They'll be coming for Star to take her away.
January, I've been thinking things over. I was wondering if it'll be mighty lonesome here for you for a while. Now why don't you come into the village and live with me?
Live with you?
Ain't much of a place, but it's comfortable, and the food's good.
And who'd be taking care of the light?
The light will take care of itself. You see, they're going to install automatic equipment.
What's that?
Look here, this telegram come last night. I'll let you read it yourself.
On the 30th this month, automatic equipment will be installed in lighthouses 8, 9, and 10. Inform all keepers their services will be no longer required.
I'm sorry, Captain. Of course, there'll be a pension for you.
A pension? Now, there's a fine life for an active man like myself. Living on a pension.
Easy, Captain.
Sitting in a soft chair, waiting for a check each month. Nothing to do but wait and think.
Easy, man. Easy now. Why? You're sick, January. You'd better come inside and lay down.
I'm not sick.
You're feverish, man. Come along.
No! I can look out for myself.
All right. I'll be in the village if you need me.
Nothing left to say.
I only want to hear one thing. You weren't telling the truth last night, were you? You really don't want me to go, do you? Please, Cap, tell me.
I'm trying to do what's best.
I know you didn't mean it. You couldn't. I don't believe you any more than you'd believe me if I said I wanted to go.
It's not a question of wanting.
Why isn't it? They can't take me if I won't go. The locket's the only thing that proves anything. And they can't find it. No one will ever find it.
There's more than the locket, Star. There's you. And the way you came here, and he... I can't explain it to you. I can't think somehow. It's all dark and misty.
You mean I gotta go with him? Is that what you mean, Cap?
Yes, Star.
But not because you want me to go. You don't, do you?
Want you to go? Would I want the sun never to rise again? Would I?
Oh, Cap.
There now. It's a fine life you'll have, darling. And I'll be coming to see you as often as they'll let me. Oftener, maybe. They're good people.
Cap, what if they hadn't come up here? We'd go on living just the same, wouldn't we? You wouldn't be talking of a fine life then. We'd be happy just like before, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but they did come.
Then, Cap, why did we run away?
What's that you're saying?
You were always talking about going somewhere else. Why don't we, Cap? Just you and me. We could take the sailboat. Now, before they come, we could be off down the coast where no one would know us.
Star, don't be saying such things. I can't think. I can't think.
Put the food in the boat. We could sail for days and days.
Oh, they'd find us. They'd bring us back.
No, they wouldn't. Please, Cap. We'll be too late if we don't hurry. I'll get the boat ready now. We'll be gone before dark.
It's the wrong thing, Star. It's wrong.
It isn't wrong. And we're going, do you hear, Cap? We're going. Is everything aboard, Cap?
All set. Get in the boat.
Wait. I forgot about Imogene. I'll turn her loose and be right back.
Hurry, Star.
Henry! What are you doing down here?
Out of my way. I'm busy.
You're going to take this boat out in a sea like this?
I can handle any boat and in any kind of sea.
Where are you going?
I'm taking Star away down the coast.
Don't be a fool. You can't do that, man. You're sick.
Sick, am I?
You're raging with the fever right now, or you'd never be thinking of such a thing.
Get out of my way, I tell you.
I won't. You're not leaving with that child if I have to knock you down and sit on you. Now get off this boat. Get off.
You know, Nazra, you and me have had a lot of fights. But I always thought that down deep you were my friend.
I am your friend.
My friend, you'd let them come here and take Star from me. And you call yourself my friend.
Jannery, it's for the best. Jannery, come up to the lighthouse.
Let me go. Let me go or I'll brain you.
Are you crazy, man? Stop it. Stop it.
What are you doing to him? Let him alone.
Star, you're not leaving here tonight.
We are. We're running away.
And no one's going to stop us. You or anybody.
Star, he's not himself. Can't you see it? The man's raving mad. He's a sick man, Star.
Sick?
Would he be taking a boat out tonight if he knew what he was doing?
Let me go. Any boat. In any sea. We're ready, Star. We're ready. We're...
Help. What's the matter? Help!
Star. Go get the doctor. Quick!
Is that all you can tell us, Doctor?
That's all, Mrs. Easton. He may pull through, and then again, well, he's a very sick man.
What about the little girl? I mean, her staying here. We don't want to take her away if it will have bad effects.
It can't have. He's barely conscious now, and it might be just as well if she weren't here. I've already told her that she's to go with you.
You'll keep us informed, won't you, Doctor?
Of course.
Shall we go, Laura? Where is Star?
I've allowed her to see him for a moment. She'll be right down.
Goodbye, Kip. I wouldn't be leaving now. Only the doctor says I ought to. But when you wake up, I'm going to try to be back. Don't forget, you're going to come and see me whenever they'll let you, and maybe oftener. And when you're not there, I'm going to be thinking of you, Cap. I'm going to be thinking of you all the time.
Star, I've been looking all over for you. Uncle Bruce will be back from New York soon. He'll want to see you.
Yes, ma'am.
Star, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Aren't you happy here, Star?
You've been wonderful to me, Aunt Laura. I've never had such beautiful clothes and things.
But that's not enough, is it?
Oh, I don't mean it like that. I've had everything here. You and Uncle Bruce, why, you've been wonderful. You even took this beach house on account of me, thinking it might make me feel better. And, well, it does, too, only...
Star, dear, you don't have to explain it to me. I know how you feel.
Have you heard anything from Cap lately?
Just that he's a lot better. You've been writing to him every day, haven't you?
Yes. He'd answer, too, but... Well, you know Cap. He isn't so strong on spelling. Aunt Laura, now that he's feeling better, do you suppose we could go and see him sometime?
Well, we'll have to wait and see if...
Laura!
Oh, there's Uncle Bruce. Come on, darling. He has a surprise for you.
Hello, Laura. Well, Star.
Hello, Uncle Bruce.
Did you bring it, Bruce?
I certainly did. Here, Star. Look out the window, down by the dock.
Why, it's a boat.
Like it?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's almost a yacht, isn't it?
Pretty nearly. Come on down, take a look at it.
Did you sail that from New York, Uncle Bruce?
All the way. Started last night.
It's awful big, isn't it?
Don't argue with me, you old rattle brain. I've sailed tops in every sea that was ever charted.
Why, it's Cap! Cap! Cap!
Star, me darling.
Oh, Cap, I thought you'd forgotten.
Forgotten you? Would I forget the north from the south, would I?
How did you get here? What are you doing?
I'm captain of this craft. That's what I'm doing.
And I'm the first mate.
Captain Nazareau.
He's the second mate.
I said first mate.
Second.
The first.
Second.
First.
Second.
Oh, gee. But it's wonderful to see you fellas on good terms again.
In just a moment, Mr. DeMille will bring back our stars for a curtain call. Now, here's Mr. DeMille with our stars.
Now Shirley Temple returns to the microphone, flanked by those two attentive seafaring gentlemen, Charles Wenninger and Gene Lockhart.
I guess I'm pretty lucky to have two escorts like this.
It's an honor, Miss Temple.
Ma'am.
My sentiments exactly, ma'am.
My goodness, gentlemen. Don't be so formal. We all work here.
And you all work well, too.
How are things going in school, Shirley?
Fine, Mr. Wenninger. Say, you know, I just found out that you learn a lot of things in school that you might use sometime instead of just keeping them in your head.
I was a lot older than you, Shirley, before I discovered that. How did you find it out?
One thing I learned in school was how to write letters. So now that my brother's gone away with the Marines, I can write and tell him how we all are here at home.
And I'll bet he's glad to get those letters. Where'd he go?
He went to Hawaii. And I think he's going to be there for a whole year.
Well, Shirley, the next time you write, wish him good luck from all of us.
And that's a wish we send to all those young men now serving these United States.
Yes, sir. I'll tell my brother. Say, Mr. DeMille, would you tell me what play you're going to have next week?
I'll tell everybody, Shirley. Next Monday night, we're going to present Rebecca. And our stars will be Ronald Coleman, Joan Fontaine, and Judith Anderson. And as a special guest, we'll have the producer of the picture, David O. Selznick. The novel was talked about around the world, and Mr. Selznick's fine motion picture was selected as the leading film of the year in the Film Daily poll of 546 motion picture critics. It's a great love story and a great drama. So tense and exciting, it held audiences right on the edge of their chairs. Next week, Rebecca promises to give this stage one of its most brilliant evenings.
I certainly agree with you there, C.B., and I'll be listening. Well, I guess it's time to go home now, Shirley. Good night.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, Charlie. Jim. I wish I had your future, Shirley. Our sponsor, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Ronald Coleman, Joan Fontaine, and Judith Anderson in Rebecca. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood. Hollywood. Shirley Temple will soon begin a picture at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Charles Wininger will be seen in the forthcoming MGM picture, Ziegfeld Girl. Gene Lockhart will be seen in the Warner Brothers production, The Sea Wolf. Heard in tonight's play were Dwayne Thompson as Mrs. Easton, Verna Felton as Mrs. Morgan, Griff Barnett as Mr. Winthrop, Bobby Winkler as Gerald, Earl Ross as Mr. Easton, Lou Merrill as Judge Hardbrow, Charles Seal as storekeeper, and Bob Burleson as doctor. This broadcast was made with the permission of L.C. Page and Company, publisher and copyright owners of Laura Richards' novel, Captain January. The brooch offered you by the makers of Lux Flakes was designed from one worn in Gone with the Wind, the Selznick International picture produced by David O. Selznick and released by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Our music is directed by Louis Silvers, and your announcer has been Melville Ruick. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
All right, you are listening to Radio Vault. Every Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock here on WHFR. We just heard Shirley Temple starring in Captain January from Lux Radio Theater, heard on CBS from January 27 of 1941. We're going to get to our seasonal offering here in just a moment. We're going back to April 17 of 1949. Eve Arden starring in Our Miss Brooks. After which we will have a triple play of Jack Benny. Certainly we play a bunch of his shows. Reason being, he was always in the top five, oftentimes number one in the ratings for his Sunday night show from all the way through to his TV career. And he did he started his TV show at the same time the radio show was still going in 1955. We've featured some of those shows in the past. We'll do some more in the future. Our first Jack Benny show in just a little while, in about a half hour, features Al Jolson, and we'll talk more about that when we get there. But right now, let's go back to April 17 of 1949. This is Eve Arden as Our Miss Brooks, the show that made a successful transition to television.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden.
And you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
What a welcome respite from day duties. But our Miss Brooks, Madison High's English teacher, didn't take any vacation.
Week working at our local Board of Education office. They had asked for volunteer assistance during the holidays to make vacations possible for their already overburdened staff. The reason I worked was a dress. The most beautiful Easter Sunday dress of all time. And the reason for the dress? Mr. Philip Boynton, the most beautiful biology teacher of all time. The price was right, too. Only $49.50 for the dress, not Mr. Boynton. That's why I asked Mrs. Davis, my landlady, to wake me at the usual 7:30 a.m. last Monday morning.
Oh, Connie, it's time to get up, Connie.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Davis. I want to get down to the board office early.
Are you sure you ought to work during your holiday, Connie? After all, you do need a vacation pretty badly.
Not as badly as I need a new dress for Easter. You know, I'm expecting Mr. Boynton to ask me out walking in the Easter parade on Sunday.
Oh, I'm sure he will, Connie. But clothes are so expensive nowadays. Isn't there something you could do to the black tailored suit of yours with the green braid trim?
Well, I could burn it. But wait till you see the one I've got my eye on. I saw it in Cherry's window last week. It's a powder blue crepe.
I think I've seen it, Connie. Is that the dress with the snugly fitted bodice, V-neckline, and a flared full skirt with enchanting accordion pleated inset in front?
Don't wrap it up. I'll eat it here.
But, Connie, that looks like it costs a lot of money.
Just $49.50, Mrs. Davis. And the job I'm taking this week pays $50. With the little I've put by, I figure I can get the dress and still have enough to live on through Easter Sunday.
But what about next Monday?
If Easter Sunday turns out the way I'm hoping it does, I won't have to live next Monday.
As the personnel manager of the board, I'd like to extend a cordial invitation, Miss Brooks.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gleason. I've been looking forward to working here. Should be a complete change for me. All new faces.
We're very grateful for the fact that you offered your services during this holiday week. In fact, what we at the board feel is hard to put into words.
Well, then why not put it into an envelope? I mean, there is a salary attached to this position.
Of course, Miss Brooks. The job pays $50. Is that all right?
Oh, that's more than all right, Mr. Gleason.
Well, if that's the case, we could...
It's just 50 cents more than's all right. Now, if you'd give me some idea of my duties,
oh, I'm not in charge of your department, Miss Brooks, but I'd like to caution you about the boss you will have. He's rather an exacting type of person. Now, I'll call our office boy, and he'll show you where to find your new boss. Boy? Oh, boy.
Here I am, Mr. Gleason, right on the job and raring to go.
Why, it's Walter Denton.
Oh, Miss Brooks, what are you doing here?
I might ask you the same question, Walter. How come you're not on vacation?
Well, it's this way, Miss Brooks.
I like to see a nice relationship between teacher and pupil, but we're all here for one reason, remember? To catch up on some work. Agreed?
Oh, sorry, Mr. Gleason. What do you want me to do?
I want you to take Miss Brooks over to the acting head of the filing department. His office is right down this hall, fourth door on your left.
Yes, sir. Come along, Miss Brooks.
All right, Walter. Thanks again, Mr. Gleason.
Thank you, Miss Brooks.
Well... So far, it's a tie. One new face and one old face. That seems like a pleasant enough place in which to work.
Work? You mean you're here to work during Easter vacation? But why?
I asked you first. Why are you working?
Well, that's simple. I'm working to get some new clothes. After all, I can't drape my clever carcass in the sharp set of threads without I nail some extra bail. Now, why are you here?
Same reason. I can't hang any snazzy rags on my chic shape without I bag some extra swag, too. Oh, I'm really on a vacation. Say, who is this new boss I'm working for, Walter?
Well, I don't know, Miss Brooks. He's one of us extra helpers, but he didn't get down yet this morning. Here's his office. Let's go in.
It's a pretty nice office. Could use a little air, though. I think I'll open the window for my new boss.
Nice view, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Say, that's very interesting. I've never had such a close look at the ventilator in a Chinese restaurant.
I sure hope your boss here is easier on you than old Napoleon is.
Napoleon?
Yeah, that's what we call our beloved principal sometimes. That is when Harriet Conklin isn't around. She doesn't like us to call her father Napoleon. She says that beneath his gruff exterior, Mr. Conklin isn't tough at all.
Believe me, Walter, beneath his gruff exterior, Mr. Conklin makes Napoleon look like Anita Louise. Oh, but I'm not going to worry about him. Every Napoleon has his Waterloo.
And I sometimes think you're mine, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Conklin? Oh, I didn't hear you come in. That is, what makes you say a thing like that?
I eavesdropped. Very unreasonable of me, isn't it? I hope I haven't wounded you, Miss Brooks.
Not wounded, sire. And smiling, the boy fell dead.
We were just chatting about French history, Mr. Conklin.
Quiet.
Yes, sire. Yes, sir.
So, my reward for working during the holidays is to be a staff composed of one of my most difficult year-round problem teachers and... this...
You better run along now, this. I mean, Walter. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Miss Brooks. And I wish you wouldn't be too strict with her, Mr. Conklin. After all, this is vacation.
Get out.
Yes, sir.
Now then, Miss Brooks, I'll be brief. This is a holiday, and we are volunteering our services. However, there is financial compensation. Even I will receive some payment for the work I do this week. And where there is payment, Miss Brooks, there must be value received.
Oh, don't worry about that, Mr. Conklin. I know you'll do a grand job.
I'm not worried about my doing a job, Miss Brooks. It's you. I expect you to conduct yourself here with the same enterprise, concentration, and serious-minded effort that you put into your... No, no. It had better be more than that. Now, if you'll just step down the hall, my secretary will show you the filing room.
Yes, sir. Oh, before I go, Mr. Conklin, would you mind telling me why you're working this week?
Not at all, Miss Brooks. I'm working to acquire a new Easter outfit for myself. My wife, in her customarily ingenious manner, has already provided herself with a new hat and dress.
How did she do that, Mr. Conklin?
By spending the bulk of our life savings. Now, I've got to get some new clothes or look like a rag picker by comparison.
Well, that's a very human reaction, Mr. Conklin. Not a bit Napoleonic.
Well, I must say you're an observant person, Miss Brooks. I've always tried to be just a plain, straightforward human being. As a matter of fact, my favorite slogan is the good old American saying that goes, Liberté, égalité, fraternité. Bonjour, mademoiselle.
See you at Elba, monsieur. Now, where's that secretary who was talking?
Miss Brooks, can I help you?
Harriet Conklin. Well, this is a real Madison reunion, isn't it?
I'm just acting as Daddy's secretary during the holiday so I can latch on to some lettuce to bribe the Easter Bunny.
Close?
Check. Now, if you'll follow me, Miss Brooks, I'll show you to the file room. It's just a few doors down. And there's another auxiliary worker in there already whom I know you'll just adore, Miss Brooks.
Who's that, Harriet?
You'll see. Here we are. I'll open the door for you, but you're going in alone.
Oh, but Harriet, I don't...
In you go.
What's that? Oh, hello, Miss Brooks.
At last, a new face.
It's me, Mr. Boynton.
Well, so it is. I didn't recognize you without the white mice in your hair. That is, the surroundings here are so different from school.
It does seem strange to see you outside of a biology laboratory.
Thanks. Somebody left the lid loose and I escaped from my job.
I didn't mean it that way, Miss Brooks. I'm certainly happy to see you down here, but why are you...
Why are you?
To get myself some...
Me too.
Well, I made up my mind to get a new suit after last year's Easter parade. I was certainly embarrassed in that brown herringbone, remember?
Well, to tell you the truth, Mr. Boynton, I was so embarrassed myself, I didn't notice your embarrassment. When I think of what I wore last season, I just have to laugh. Oh, what an old rag. A black... black tailored suit with green braid trim.
Well, if we're to get new outfits, we'd better put in a good week's work starting right now. Of course, this filing room's pretty small for two people to work in, isn't it?
Yes, it is, isn't it? Well, I'll just go over here.
Oops,
to the...
Oh, excuse me. Gosh, every time we turn around, we're going to bump into each other.
Mr. Boynton?
Yes, Miss Brooks?
First one who stops turning is a sissy.
We started work on Monday, and here it is Friday already. The time sure went fast. It seems as if I only worked an hour.
You worked less than an hour.
Here's the pay window, Miss Brooks. You can get in line right behind Walter and me.
Thanks, Harriet.
Keep the line moving, please. Next.
Oh, that's me, Mr. Gleason. Denton Walter.
Here's your check, Denton Walter. Happy Easter.
Thank you, sir.
I'm next. Brooks Constance.
Brooks Constance. Here you are, Brooks Constance. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Easter happy to you, Gleason, mister. Now, let's see now. With this $50, I can... Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me, Mr. Gleason.
Was something wrong, Miss Brooks?
Why, yes. This check is for $37.50. I thought I was to receive $50.
Deductions, Miss Brooks. Withholding tax, Social Security, unemployment. Then, of course, there's the $5 contribution, which all volunteer workers at the Board of Education must make to the pension fund for old teachers.
Pension fund for... Mr. Gleason.
Yes, Miss Brooks?
Give me mine now. I just aged 30 years.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment.
Saturday morning finally rolled around, but the $12.50 between me and my blue crepe Easter dress didn't roll around with it. Right after breakfast, Mrs. Davis and I sat down in the living room and tried to figure a way out.
I know what, Connie. Maybe Sherry's department store will let you owe them the $12.50. You know, pay it off on time.
I'd rather not ask them, Mrs. Davis.
But why not?
They might bring up the $14 I owe them for my black suit.
I'd be happy to loan you the money myself, Connie, but... Honestly, I haven't got it.
Oh, I wouldn't think of accepting a loan from you, Mrs. Davis, inasmuch as you haven't got it.
I've got just enough petty cash left to buy the things we'll need for tomorrow's Easter party.
Party?
Yes, didn't I tell you? I've asked some of our friends in for a little egg hunt, an Easter luncheon. I'm going out to get the eggs and coloring in a few minutes.
Sounds like fun.
I'm going to write the names of all my favorite people on the eggs and hide them individually. But there are two names which I'm going to hide right next to each other. Guess which ones, Connie?
Mr. Boynton and myself?
No, Lum and Abner. Oh, I just know your spirits will perk up when the party starts. I've asked several of our mutual friends, the Conklins, Walter Denton, your fellow English teacher, Miss Enright, Mr. Boynton...
Please, Mrs. Davis, even in conversation, you shouldn't put Miss Enright so close to Mr. Boynton.
You don't have to worry about Mr. Boynton at all.
To do is convince Mr. Boynton.
Well, Miss Enright has a lot of nice qualities.
Well, I'd like to find them, but that far down... of it is, she'll probably be while I sit around in that black sack of mine. Even Mr. Boynton's getting a new suit to replace his brown herringbone.
You mustn't give up hope, Connie. We'll think of some way to get you that new dress. Who knows? The Easter Bunny may stop by and drop it right into your lap. Well, I'm going to the market now, dear.
All right, Mrs. Davis.
What are you going to do?
What can I do? I'll sit here and make a lap.
Well, all right, then. I promise not to tell where I got the money. I'd love you to let Miss Brooks have it, especially since it means giving up your own Easter outfit.
Oh, rocking chairs got me. Cane by my side. Fetch me $12.50. Or tomorrow I will hide. Unless that's the Easter bun, not interested. Oh, coming. Well, if it isn't Miss Enright.
Good morning, Miss Brooks. I hope I didn't waken you.
Awaken me?
Aren't you going to ask me in, Miss Brooks?
Let's go into the living room. Let's sit down, Miss Enright.
There. That's you. Rickety old thing, isn't it?
Now, look here, Miss Enright.
I just came by to lend a hand with the arrangements for tomorrow's Easter party.
Who? But Mrs. Davis will be.
Oh. Well, I assume you've got your Easter outfit all set.
Oh, yes. Except for a few odds and ends I pick up this afternoon.
Trouble. My dress alone cost over $100.
Money.
Oh, I didn't buy it out of my salary. Papa, Bill? Can your papa help you out with your... Same. But you love a sash drape over the hips.
A bustle on you?
Yes. What's wrong with my wearing a bustle?
Nothing, darling, but isn't that like carrying coals to Newcastle?
Well, if that's how my friendly overtures are received, I'll just be running along.
See you to the door, Miss Enright?
No, thanks, Miss Brooks. You'd better stay in your rocker and exercise your wits. Goodbye, darling.
I don't care what she wears. If I were Mr. Boynton, I'd ask me out instead of her any day. Nice of you to take me shopping, Walter. Now I've got everything I need for Easter Sunday.
But I thought you didn't have enough loot, Miss Brooks. How could you buy all this stuff if you had the shorts?
The shorts? Oh, not enough money. Well, Mrs. Davis came home a few hours ago and handed me an envelope with $25 in it. $12.50 more than I needed.
$25? Where'd she get it?
She wouldn't tell me. She said she was sworn to secrecy.
Well, you know what I always say? Never look a gift bunny in the mouth. What did you buy with the dough?
Just a hat and dress.
What kind?
Well, it's a powder blue sheer crepe with a snugly fitted bodice, V-shaped neckline, cut rather low, with an accordion pleated inset in the front.
And what kind of a dress did you get?
An off-the-face straw with a belt in the back.
Before we have lunch, let's all join in the grand egg hunt. Will you explain the rules, Connie?
I'll be glad to, Mrs. Davis. What are they?
I think I know, Miss Brooks. We all hunt through the house for the eggs, and as we find them, we bring them to Mrs. Davis, who marks our names down on a piece of paper.
That's right, Walter. Then the one who finds the most eggs gets the prize. Isn't that correct, Daddy?
If I find any eggs, I'm going to eat them. I'm starved.
Now then, get ready, everyone. When I say three, the hunt is on. And remember, I'll be sitting at the kitchen table with a pencil and paper. Ready? One, two, three!
Miss Brooks.
Yes, Walter?
Could you give me a hint where some of the eggs might be hidden?
Have you tried looking in Miss Enright's bustle? She's got enough room back there to hide the hens that laid them.
That bustle certainly is a screen. Confidentially, Miss Brooks, your new Easter gown is much prettier than Miss Enright's.
Well, thank you, Walter.
It's such a beautiful shade of blue. And those pleats are really a smash. And I'm not just talking this way because you're an English teacher and that's a subject which I'm not completely at home in always, and I'm afraid maybe I'll flunk in. Without any such axes to grind, Miss Brooks, you're gorgeous.
Keep talking that way, Walter, and you ain't never gonna flunk.
I really mean it, Miss Brooks. When Mr. Boynton gets here and sees you in that outfit, I'll bet he jumps right out of his skin.
You better not. Miss Enright will jump right into it. Keeping Mr. Boynton. He should have been here by now.
I gathered that from Miss Enright's attitude. Half the morning she's been facing the door in a running position. Well, I'd better join the happy egg hunters. Would you excuse me, Miss Brooks?
Certainly, Walter. Good luck.
Well, hello, Miss Brooks. I see the egg you're hunting for hasn't rolled in yet.
If you're referring to Mr. Boynton, Miss Enright, I'm not a bit worried about missing him. The minute your quarry makes an appearance, I'm sure your bustle will come to a point.
Let bygones be bygones, at least for a little while. May I compliment you on your gown?
Oh, please do.
It's lovely.
Well,
don't puff up like a powder pigeon. I merely said the gown was lovely.
Oh.
The regrettable fact remains that no matter how lovely the gown we wear, some of us still manage to make it look like the bag it came in.
That does it. You have just bygoned your last bygone.
You're just full of bon mots, aren't you? Oh, that last gem just killed me.
Well, you've still got 8 lives to go.
Try looking in the back of the house, folks. They must be someplace.
What's the trouble, Mrs. Davis?
Oh, they've only found 6 eggs I hid, Connie. They can't seem to find any of the others. Not even Plum and Abner, the 2 I hid together.
Oh, well, why don't you give them some hints, Mrs. Davis?
I can't. I forget where I hid them. They'll just have to go on hunting.
I, for one, shall hunt no more. Where's my lunch, Margaret?
It's buffet style today, Osgood. Why don't you and the children just go right ahead and get started?
Splendid. Harriet, Walter, let's tie on the feed bag. Miss Brooks?
No, thanks. Miss Enright, why don't you join Mr. Conklin and the kids? I'm sure they'll miss you more than I would.
No, thanks, dear. I'll just stay right here.
I wish Mr. Boynton would show up. I'm getting a little tired of peering out the window. I think I'll just sit down here facing the door.
Ah! What's the matter, Connie?
I just found Lum and Abner.
Oh, what a shame, darling. The eggs splattered all over your blue dress.
Oh, this is awful. These eggs weren't even boiled, Mrs. Davis.
I'm sorry, Connie. I must have forgotten.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that reminds me. There was something else I forgot to tell you.
What?
Mr. Boynton called while you were in the shower and said he wasn't coming over. But would you meet him in the park near the zoo right away?
Meet him in the park? But my dress is ruined. What'll I wear?
Does it matter, really, darling? Remember, there's another Easter parade next year.
I'm sorry I'm late, Mr. Boynton, but Mrs. Davis didn't give me your message until a few minutes ago.
Well, that's all right, Miss Brooks. We've got the whole day ahead of us. You see, the reason I didn't come to the house was, well, I knew everyone would be all dressed up, and frankly, I was a little self-conscious about my appearance.
Your appearance? You should have seen what happened to me. No, you shouldn't have. Well, here I am.
And you look wonderful, Miss Brooks. I know you work most of the time, but like I told Mrs. Davis yesterday, that week away from school did you a lot of good.
Mrs. Davis? You saw Mrs. Davis yesterday?
Well, yes. She dropped by while she was shopping. Just a little social call, you understand.
I understand a lot of things now, Mr. Boynton.
I know I've been pretty reticent in the past, but today I want to tell you something that comes from the bottom of my heart.
Yes, Mr. Boynton?
To me, you're just the grandest lady in the Easter parade. That new black suit with the green trim is a knockout.
A knockout? You know, I think you mean that. Mr. Boynton, may I tell you something?
What's that, Miss Brooks?
You're the grandest Easter bunny that ever wore a brown herringbone suit.
As our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first... And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, the Easter parade was a big success. And after staying out in the air all day, Mr. Boynton and I got pretty hungry. So as soon as we got home, we headed right for the kitchen.
Oh, I don't want you to go to any trouble, Miss Brooks.
Oh, no trouble at all, Mr. Boynton. There must be something left from the luncheon.
Oh, can I do anything to help?
No, thanks. You just sit down and I'll tell you all about the egg hunt.
Okay, I'll sit right here. What's that?
Mr. Boynton.
Yes?
How do you want your pants, fried or scrambled?
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Mary Jane Croft, and Ed Begley. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Now stay tuned for Welcome Back Baseball, which follows over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting.
There you have it, Our Miss Brooks from April 17, 1949. In case you just stumbled onto us, this is Radio Vault every Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock here on 89.3 at WHFR.FM.
Out of the crowd, I can feel your presence, drawing me closer and closer to you. It feels like
we're going to make way for a triple play of Jack Benny coming up right around the corner from right now. Thanks for hanging with us.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden.
As life starts moving faster and faster, we need to make a choice to move faster with it or to step off every now and then to marvel at the wonders around us, to take in new sights and sounds, songs and experiences, and to just remember how beautiful life can be. Let's take a deep breath and remember that each Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., there's Afternoon Jazz with Mr. Jags. Basking in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon, a place where this season we can all savor the moment and take a deep breath of pure jazz. Your journey begins on 89.3 WHFR.
The Jack Benny Program. With Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, the Sportsman Quartet, and yours truly, Tom. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the star of our show. A man who for years has won the highest accolade of critics and public alike.
Oh, Don, please.
A man whose unique abilities have brought him to the pinnacle of success and whose... Oh, I can't read this stuff.
You'll read it and like it.
A man whose talent is exceeded only by his modesty. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I don't see why it should be so hard for you to say a few nice things about me. But I'm happy you managed to struggle through that introduction.
Well, Jack, the only reason I did was because I was afraid you'd fire me.
Don, I couldn't fire you.
Why not?
Because this happens to be National Save Your Fat Week. That's why.
Oh, come on now, Jack. There hasn't been a National Save Your Fat Week since 1944.
Don, Edward R. Murrow can be topical. I have to be funny. Anyway, you know what today is, don't you?
Yes, yes, I do. It was exactly 20 years ago today that I agreed to go on your show.
Oh, gosh, Jack, have you and Don really been together that long?
We sure have, Bob. And right from the start, it was a wonderful association. No arguments, no bickering, no lawyers.
That's right, Bob. He just tattooed the contract on my stomach and let it go at that.
And every year, there's been room for new clauses. Don, I don't... Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
Over here, boy. Hey, it's from Dennis.
Anything wrong?
Let me read it. Dear Mr. Benny, I may be a little late for the show today as I have to get my shoes shined and my car washed. I'm also eloping to Niagara Falls. Dennis, eloping to Niagara Falls? What a crazy kid.
I didn't even know he had a girl.
Out of a clear blue sky, Dennis elopes. Couldn't get married like everyone else, with a ceremony and guests and a nice violin solo. Oh, well, if Dennis...
Pardon me, Mr. Benny.
Are you still here?
Well, I hate to mention it, but when one delivers a telegram, it's customary for one to get a tip.
Oh, of course. Now, how much do you usually get?
Well, that's up to you. I wouldn't want to influence you in any way.
Well, let's see.
Do you mind if I use your phone a minute?
No, go ahead.
Hello, Martha. This is Hyman. Hey, how's Grandma? Oh, not any better, huh? Well, what can we do? We can't afford medicine for the baby either. But, Mark, if we spend that money on medicine, we won't be able to buy any food. Huh? The landlord was over? What'd he say? He's only going to give us 2 more days. Huh? Well, I'll try to see what I can do, Martha. Keep up your courage. Bye.
Control yourself. Control yourself. Here, I've got a tip for you.
Oh, gee, thanks, Mr. I... Oh, no.
What's the matter?
For a lousy dime, I just wasted a routine I could have used on Strike at Rich.
Look, that's all the change I have for a tip. Anyway, I'm doing a radio program now, so why don't you wait?
Oh, hello, Mr. Benny.
Dennis, what are you doing here? I thought you were eloping.
Oh, that's all off.
All off? What happened?
Well, this morning I was about to propose to the girl, and I really saw her for the first time.
You mean...
She's got long, stringy hair, beady eyes, bad complexion, a mean face, and she's as big as a horse.
Gee, she sounds like a mess.
Yeah, boy, am I glad she turned me down.
She turned you down?
Oh, I don't care. I'll marry her twin sister.
Oh, fine.
You should see her twin sister. She's got a figure like Marilyn Monroe, legs like Betty Grable, hair like Rita Hayworth, and a face like Ava Gardner.
Dennis, if the other girl is so ugly, how could her twin sister be so beautiful?
You and Ed Murrow can be technical. I have to be funny.
Sing your song, will you?
Hey, compari, ci va sonari, chi si suona un friscaletto, e come si suona un friscaletto, un friscaletto, tipiti, tipiti, ta. Hey, compari, ci va sonari, chi si suona un saxofona, ma come si suona un saxofona. Tu saxofon, un friscalette, tipiti, tipiti, ta. E compari, ci va a sonare, chi si suona un violino, ma come si suona un violino. A zing, a zing, un violin, tu, 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 saxofon. Un frisca lette, tipiti, tipiti, ma. E compari, ci possonari, chi si suona alla trombeta, ma come si suona alla trombeta. Pa 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 la trombetta, zing zing, un violin, tu 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 saxofon, un frisca e tipiti tipiti ta. E compari, ci va a suonare, chi si suona alla trombona, ma come si suona alla trombona. A fumma fumma la trombone, pa 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 la trombetta, zing zing un violin, tu 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 saxofon, un frisca letto, tipiti tipiti ta. Tipiti tipiti, tipiti tipiti ta.
Good, Dennis. That was wonderful. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to do our version of Universal International's classic of the gridiron, All American.
Hey, isn't that the one where Tony Curtis stars as a football hero?
That's right. In fact, tonight, I'm playing his role.
Oh, but Jack, Tony Curtis is so young. How can you even think of taking the part he played?
Look, there's no sense in arguing because I'm going to play the Tony Curtis part and nobody can stop me.
I can.
Who are you?
Tony Curtis.
Well, Tony! Tony Curtis, this is a surprise.
Well, Jack, I was at the studio when I heard about you doing this sketch tonight, so I thought I'd get down here as fast as I could.
Oh.
Jack, you really don't intend to take the part I played in the picture, do you?
Well, of course I do.
Well, don't you think it's a little ridiculous?
Well, what's so ridiculous about it?
Jack, the picture happens to be all American, not early American.
Look, Tony, I don't understand your attitude at all. It so happens that the producer of your picture, Aaron Rosenberg, is a very good friend of mine. If you don't let me play the part, you'll have to go back to the studio and face him. I mean, how would you explain it to him? I mean, what would you tell him?
Him drove me down here.
Well, look, Tony, I'm going to play the part unless you have a strenuous objection.
Well, I do. I think you playing the part of a college boy is incongruous.
Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell... Hey, Bob. Bob, come here a minute, will you?
Yes, Jack?
What does incongruous mean? Huh?
Well, I'm not sure.
Oh, Remley!
Never mind! Now, Remley, a fine fellow to ask. His dictionary consists of scotch, bourbon, black and white, Hagen Hake. Now, look, Tony.
I'll tell you what incongruous means. It means inappropriate, unbecoming, not harmonious in character, inconsonant or inconsistent.
Oh.
Well, I still don't understand it.
The meaning of incongruous?
Oh, how one twin can be so beautiful and the other one so ugly.
Dennis, we're not talking about that.
Well, I don't understand incongruous either.
Look, Dennis, explain it to him, Tony.
All right, I'll make it simple, Dennis. Incongruous means something that doesn't fit.
Certainly, you know, something that doesn't fit. Now, Tony, you just sit down in the studio and watch me play your part. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
Take it down.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you our version of that thrilling Universal International picture, All American. The saga of college life on the gridiron. Curtain, music. The This is the story of a poor boy who, because of his talent on the football field, was able to go to college, rise to the top, and become an All-American.
My name is Nick. Nick Bonner-Krasinska-Vishalikovsky. In my first year at Mid-State University, I was the star quarterback. I'll never forget that crucial game for the championship. I caught the opening kickoff and ran it back for a touchdown. The crowd went wild. The rooting section stood up and began to cheer for me.
Bonner Krasinska, Vitrolikovsky, Bonner Krasinska, Vitrolikovsky.
Quarter. The rest of the game was routine till the last few minutes when I made one spectacular play. I kicked a field goal from the 16-yard line. The crowd went wild.
B-O-N-N-A-K-R-A-C-I-N-S.
It was then that I decided to change my name. I changed it to Benelli, Nick Benelli. At the end of the season, I made every All-American team. My passing was praised by Conyers. My running was applauded by Look. And my deodorant won the Good Housekeeping Seal. But Mid-State didn't give football scholarships, so I transferred to Sheridan College. And the next fall, I found myself in the registrar's office, where the dean's secretary was filling out my entrance application.
Now, let's see. Nick Benelli. Oh, here's your card. Now, tell me, what is your height?
5'11".
Your weight?
173.
Color of your eyes? Oh, they're blue, aren't they?
Bluer than the toes of a barefooted field goal kicker.
That's all the questions, and... Oh, just a second. You're here on a football scholarship, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, in that case, you will be provided with tuition, room, and board, and you'll be given $100 a month to spend.
Do I have to spend it?
No.
Thank you.
Now, of course, you and all the other football players will have to earn that money.
I understand. What will my job be?
Well, in the dean's office, there's an 8-day clock.
And I'm supposed to wind it?
No, the fullback winds it. Your job is to see that he does.
Under the burden of this assignment, I began my first year at Sheridan. I'll never forget the day I met our famous football coach. I remember how he walked into the dressing room and said...
All right, you men, I want all the linemen to go out and practice tackling. The ends brush up on pass receiving. Halfbacks will put in 2 hours each bucking the line. The fullbacks will spend the whole day trying to kick field goals. And you, you're playing quarter, aren't you?
Yes, sir. What shall I do?
Scratch my back.
This was a thrilling moment for me. At last, I had met that great coach, Itchy Day. I stood there, scratching his back. He looked at me and yelled...
Do it again! Do it again! Harder! Harder! Do it again! Do it again! Harder! Harder!
Now, wait a minute, Coach. I don't want to do this. I'm an All-American at Mid-State.
Well, you're at Sheridan now, and everybody starts from scratch. And another thing, we observe strict training here.
Yes, sir.
That means no parties, no dancing, and no dates with girls. And you'll take all your meals at the training table. You have to be in bed by 9, up at 6, and we practice 7 days a week.
But what do we do for fun here at Sheridan?
On Tuesday night, you play Scrabble with naughty words.
Yes, Coach Day was a strict disciplinarian, and when it came to football, he was a perfectionist. We had a good team, but the players weren't very bright. So Coach Day had little radios installed in our helmets so we could listen to the broadcast of the game and find out who had the ball. One day I tuned in the wrong station and tackled John's other wife. After starring in three straight games, I was the toast of the campus. But I found out that Sheridan was different than Mid-State. These students were snobs, and my roommate, Robert Carter, was the biggest snob of all. He was always nagging me.
Hey, Vanelli.
What is it, Robert?
How many times have I told you? When you store things in the closet, keep your mothballs away from mine.
But how can you tell the difference?
Mine are monogrammed.
Oh, Robert, why can't we be friends?
I don't like riffraff.
But, Robert, I'm so popular on the campus, all the fraternities are begging me to join.
Well, mine is the ritziest one, and I'm sure that you won't get in.
Why not?
Because I'm the only member. And the only reason I got in is my brother owns a college.
Later, I found out his brother also owned Minute Maid orange juice, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Pittsburgh. But Robert set me straight on one thing.
Vanelli, you don't fit in here. If you didn't play football, nobody at Sheridan would even talk to you.
Oh, yeah? They'd still like me for myself.
Well, what makes you think so?
I'll tell you why. Because I've got a winning personality. Muscles of steel that the fellows admire and respect. And the kind of youth and good looks that make girls swoon.
That door slam wasn't Robert. It was Tony Curtis leaving the studio. I decided to find out if Robert was right. The next day, I turned in my uniform, and overnight, I became the most unpopular person on the campus. A few weeks later, at the dance before the big game, I sat for hours in a corner by myself. Nobody came within 5 feet of me. I was beginning to think good housekeeping might have been wrong. It was then that I saw her.
Hello, handsome.
She was beautiful, and I had a hunch she was popular, too. She was wearing 164 fraternity pins. No dress, just fraternity. She smiled and came jingling towards me. Before I knew it, we were dancing together.
What's your name?
Viola Ward.
I'm Nick Benelli.
I know. Gee, Nick, dancing with you is different than dancing with the other college fellows.
It is?
Yes. They don't even know the minuet.
Gee, Viola, you're beautiful. Will you marry me?
I might if you changed your mind and played football again.
Oh, so that's it. Well, I wouldn't play football for anything.
Not even if I kissed you like this?
No.
Like this?
No.
Or even like this?
I decided to play football after the first kiss, but I wasn't foolish enough to tell her. The next day, I was sitting alone in my room, and from the stadium, I could hear the cheers of the crowd and the glee club as they sang our school song.
You gotta be a football hero to get along with the beautiful girls. In spite of all a $1 million can do, a
jackal or two will mean more to you. The fact that you are rich or handsome won't get you anything in curves. You gotta be a football hero to get along with a beautiful girl.
I was not made of stone, and the school spirit in that song got me. I rushed to the stadium and slipped into my good old uniform. The game was well into the fourth period. Sheridan was trailing by 1 point. And as I ran out into the field, the crowd went wild.
B-O-N-N-A-K-R.
I changed it! I changed it!
In the huddle, I called my favorite play, but it was stopped cold. The opposing team had the biggest line in football. His name was Don Wilson. Once I ran around his end and was out of bounds by 10 yards. Time was running out, but I kept cool. I knew our chance would come. Then with seconds left to play, I intercepted a pass. And as I weaved down the field, suddenly everything went black. I couldn't see a thing. My helmet had slipped down over my eyes. It didn't fit. In other words, it was incongruous. I threw off my helmet and cut to the left. I paced to the right. I zigzagged. Suddenly, I thought of viola. And I found myself doing the minuet on the 20-yard line. As I started running again, I realized there was only one man between me and the goal line. But I couldn't get by him. Then I noticed he wasn't even wearing a football uniform. And I hollered at him.
Why don't you let me get by?
I'm still waiting for my pep.
But I didn't give him the tip. Why should I? After all, it was Tony Curtis, and not I, who was the All-American.
Friends, forest fires are one of our great national hazards. Today, perhaps this very minute, a forest fire is raging because somebody was careless. Somebody tossed away a lighted cigarette, forgot to put out a campfire, or was careless with matches. Forest fires ravage millions of acres of timberland, weaken America, take lives. So please, be careful. Be cautious. Don't give fire a place to start. Thank you. Jack will be back in just a minute, but first...
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Tony Curtis, who appeared tonight through the courtesy of Universal International Pictures and will soon be seen in his latest picture, Forbidden. Good night, everybody. We're a little late.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
And now stay tuned for the Amos and Andy Show, which follows in just a moment. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
I knew there was a better career out there for me, but I couldn't afford to quit my job to get the necessary education. Thanks to Henry Ford College, I didn't have to. In just 2 years, I earned my associate's degree and was ready to start a new career in the industry I love. I work hard for myself and for my family, and I've earned the chance to advance in my job and in my life. Henry Ford gave me that chance. I'm a Henry Ford College graduate, and I'm future-driven.
Henry Ford College. Future-driven.
All right, Radio Vault is rolling. We just heard Jack Benny along with Tony Curtis in a show from November 8, 1953. We're rolling for another hour with two more Jack Benny shows on the way. Once again, you are locked in with Radio Vault, heard every Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. It's always an adventure to find what we'll hear at 1 o'clock, but it'll be a good one, I promise you that. As we close in on the 12 noon hour, we need to remind you that we are listener-supported non-commercial radio from Henry Ford College, featuring local and independent artists. We are WHFR Dearborn. So let us now go to May 18 of 1947. At that time, the show was originally sponsored by a cigarette company, but we won't hear any of those, I promise you. Al Jolson is the featured guest. And this show back in the day originated from New York.
I knew there was a better career out there for me, but I couldn't afford to.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and filling in for little old fatty Don Wilson is yours truly, Kenny Delmar. Ladies and gentlemen, it has often been said that it takes brains to make money. I don't want to start an argument, but here's the star of our show, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Kenny Delmar, you can save those introductions for Fred Allen. You know, you don't have to... Kenny, I'm talking to you. Kenny, look at me.
I'm sorry, Jack, but when I hear the name Fred Allen, I instinctively bow my head.
Well, Kenny, if you bow your head low enough, you might see his hooper. Imagine making people bow to him. Of course, I haven't been to New York a long time.
Well, Jack, the last time you were in New York and you met Fred Allen, you bowed.
Kenny, I wasn't bowing. I just couldn't look at that face. What a homely guy. I've never seen a guy.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Jack. Fred isn't so homely.
He isn't, eh? Alan's face has so many wrinkles, when he gets a shave, the barber has to use a bookmark. The only time Alan's face isn't out of place is during the baseball season.
The baseball season?
Yeah, with those bags under his eyes, his nose looks like it's caught between second and third. And the rest of them should be sent to the showers. Believe me.
Well, Jack, I didn't want to mention this, but since you're talking about Alan, I think it's only fair that I tell you something.
What?
Well, Fred said that you've got so much money that you have no more places to keep it.
Uh-huh.
So any money you make from now on, you're going to have melted down and shot into your arm.
You know, it's a good idea. It'll give me all my vitamins. M-O-N-E and Y.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. Hi. Mary, I haven't seen you since we got off the train. Where have you been?
Well, I went right from the station to New Jersey to visit my mother.
Your mother, eh? Well, how is the duck-billed platypus of Plainfield?
Jack, please.
I don't know. They told me that's a local joke here, is it? Everybody told me if I say it, they'll scream at it.
Mama doesn't look like that.
I'm sorry, May. Maybe if she went to a beauty parlor, she could, you know. How's your sister, Babe? I hope she's not running around with that guy she wrote you about, the Undertaker.
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. He's a nice fellow, and he's very sporty. He's the only Undertaker in Plainfield who has a convertible hearse.
Convertible hearse? That's a good idea. Get a little brown before they lower you down. Your sister really picks him, doesn't she?
Yeah, but Babe is thinking of giving him up because he's always got his mind on his work.
What do you mean, kid?
Well, one day she went riding with him without her makeup on, and he drove her straight to the cemetery.
Yeah, I bet Babe was frightened, wasn't he?
You're not kidding. He almost finished the eulogy before she punched him in the nose.
Well, why didn't she stop him sooner?
Those are the first nice things he ever said about her.
See, well, is Babe still in Plainfield?
Oh, no, no. She came back to New York with me. In fact, she's sitting in the audience right now.
Where?
Right in the third row. The girl with the marble hat.
Oh, yeah. Look at what it says. Babe Livingston, please keep off the grass. Oh, by the way, Mary, I want you to meet Kenny Delmar. He's our announcer today.
Kenny Delmar? Why, Jack, you took him right off the Fred Allen show.
No, no, Mary, not right off the Allen show. I sprayed him first. You know, I'd like to see Allen's face next Wednesday when he sees my name in lights at the Roxy Theater. You know, he got sick when he heard about the business we did in Chicago.
Jack, I understand that it's the first time in the history of the Chicago Theater that it passed the $100,000 mark for any week. How much did you get out of it?
Well, I hate to brag, Kenny. You tell him, Mary, huh?
Well, in setting the new record, Jack...
Racket, the new one?
Leave it in, it's good.
You know, it was a new racket. Start the line again, Mary. It's too good to lose.
Okay. Well, in setting the new record, Jack took in $113,000 for the week.
$113,000?
Yes, but of course he had to pay Phil, Rochester, Margie Reynolds, and the quartet. That left him $112,000.
Yes.
Then he paid his income tax, and that left him $1.65.
Uh-huh.
Which he owes me for doing his laundry.
I would have done it myself, but I didn't want to open at the Roxy with red hands. So you see, Kenny... You know, you have to wait here a little longer than Los Angeles. I'm getting used to it now. You see, Kenny, it isn't all... Come in.
Pardon the intrusion, Mr. Benny.
Well, it's Mr. Kitzel. Hey, Mr. Kitzel, are you having fun here in New York? Well, where have you been?
No place.
You mean you're just staying in your hotel room?
Who lives in hotel rooms? When I come to New York, I live with my aunt.
Your aunt?
Yes, Penzi Nussbaum.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
She lives in Anelli, and what neighbor she's got. On the one side lives a senator who's always talking about the South.
Yeah.
Next door lives a farmer who is always saying, howdy, Bobcat. And also is living there a man named Ajax Cassidy who is not long for this world.
You're comfortable at Mrs. Nussbaum.
Yes, but next week, Penzi's mother is coming to live with her, so I'm moving to the YMCA.
The YMCA?
Yanko Mendelbaum's Chateau Amour.
Well, Mr. Kitzel, I hope you're enjoying your visit here.
Oh, thank you, I am. And next week, I'm going to see your show when you open by the Roxy Theater.
Good, you like my show.
Yes, Yes, indeed. Particularly if Phil Harris is going to sing that song. Won't you come with me to Alabama? There we'll meet my dear old mammy. She's frying eggs and broiling pastrami. That's what I like about the South.
Pastrami?
Pastrami, yes.
Mr. Kitzel, the word is hammy.
Look, I just came in to say hello. Don't antagonize me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, all right, Mr. Benny. I'll come to see your show.
Thank you. I mean, thank you. Got me doing it now. Goodbye, Mr. Kitzel.
Goodbye.
He's such a sweet little guy. I hope he has a good time here in New York. There's so many places to go. Excuse me, there's the phone. Hello?
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I have a long-distance call for you from Chicago.
Chicago? Who's calling?
The Sportsman Quartet.
Oh, my quartet. Put them on.
Yes, sir. Here they are.
Hello? Fellas, what do you want? What's so important that you call me here in New York?
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Effie Boone. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that we will be there soon.
You will be here soon.
And when you go to Lindy's, please try and save a seat for me.
For you.
Gentlemen, your 3 minutes. Boys. Boys. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
It was nice of my quartet to call me from Chicago. I wonder how they got that piano in the phone booth. They must
have. Okay, folks, you can wipe off that frown, because here comes Harris, the toast of the town.
Oh, fine, the toast of the town. Rye toast. 90-proof rye.
Say, Phil, are you having a good time here in New York?
Oh, wonderful, Livy, wonderful. What a combination. Me in New York. Me, the world's greatest entertainer in the world's greatest city.
Phil, how can you say such a thing?
Why, ain't New York the world's greatest city?
Jack, put down that knife. We've only got one more show.
All right. I guess I can stand it if you can.
Ah, New York, Jackson. Gee, it's great to be back here. What a city. What sight. The Empire State Building, Fifth Avenue, Central Park, and Mayor LaGuardia.
Phil, look at... Come here, soapbox head. Look, I got news for you. LaGuardia isn't mayor of New York anymore. He's out of office.
Well, how do you like that, Happy Chandler? First DeRosa, now LaGuardia.
Oh, my goodness. Mary, you take it, will you?
Okay. Say, Phil, what have you been doing in town? Seen any shows?
Yeah, I went to see a show last night. It was all about Jackson.
Wait a minute, Phil. A show about me? What was the name of it?
Call Me Miser.
That's Mister. Call me Mister.
Okay, Mr. Miser.
All right, cut that out.
Okay, okay, don't get sore about it. I was only... Hey, ain't that Kenny Delmar?
Hello, Filthy Boy.
Hiya, Kenny, good to see you again.
Oh, you know Kenny?
Why, Circular Son, met him last summer, June, that is.
Yeah, Jack, it was when Phil was a guest on Fred's program.
Oh, I didn't know that Phil was a guest on Alan's show.
He was, and very good, too.
Kenny, tell me something.
Why?
Did he sing it?
All 50 choruses.
I thought so. How he has the nerve to come up and... Excuse me. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Rochester, where have you been? I expected you to call me yesterday from Grand Central Station.
I got off at 125th Street.
125th Street? Well, you were certainly anxious to get to Harlem.
Anxious? I start dragging 1 foot at Albany.
But Rochester, how could you get off? The train doesn't stop at 125th Street.
I found that out, so I pulled the emergency cord.
The emergency cord? Did that stop the train fast?
Did it. The diner came in the Grand Central Station piggyback.
Oh, stop that. Why is it every time we go to New York, you rush to Harlem?
Well, I had to go there yesterday. It was a big holiday. Everybody was drinking toast with each other and throwing confetti out the window and dancing in the street.
Gee, what holiday was it?
Boys, we were having so much fun, we forgot to name it.
That's what I thought. Well, look, Rochester, we can't talk anymore because I got to do my show.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, Rochester.
Yes, sir?
I got some work for you to do tomorrow.
I can't tomorrow. There's another holiday coming up.
Never mind that now. I want you to go over to my hotel and press my gray suit. I'm going to wear it Wednesday when I open at the Roxy.
But, boss, that gray suit doesn't give enough contact with your golden curly locks.
Well, Rochester, what can I do? I don't have any other suit.
I know, but you've got other hair.
Not anymore. Chicago was windier than I thought. I'll see you at my hotel. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss, happy birthday.
It's not my birthday.
It's too late now. My friends are drinking to it.
Oh, hang up. Goodbye. That guy drives me nuts. Well, kids, let's get on with the show because, you know, Al Jolson's going to be our guest star.
Well, how come he hasn't arrived yet?
Well, Mary told me he was driving over here and there's a lot of traffic and, I don't know, maybe Al isn't a very good driver.
Hey, Jackson, maybe you don't like the way Al Jolson drives, but have you ever seen the way Larry parks? You may not be Guy Lombardo, but you're the sweetest thing this side of heaven.
Isn't that awful?
That was my last line, Mother. You can turn it off now.
Bill, come back here. If you miss another one, it's going to be your last line. Imagine telling your mother to turn off the radio. That's terrible.
Don't you worry, Jackson. Mom knows enough to turn it back on for the Fitch bandwagon.
Oh, brother. Now I've heard everything.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
Why, it's Al! Al Jolson! Say, Al, what took you so long getting here?
Well, you know how it is, Jack. I drove over and there's an awful lot of traffic.
Oh, yes, I remember now. And you're not such a good driver.
Say, listen, maybe you don't like the way I drive. But have you ever seen the way Larry parks? I got a gag here.
No, Al, turn the page. Oh. Turn the page. Al, Phil just did that joke.
What's the difference? You get a million new listeners when I come on.
I know. That's why it's nice having you on my show.
Well, it's nice being with you, Jack.
But gee, Al, you've been making so many guest star appearances, I can't understand why you work so hard.
Well, Jack, weren't you ambitious when you were my age?
Your age?
Yeah.
How old are you?
38.
Gee, we all seem to get stuck there. But Al, seriously, you shouldn't work so hard. Don't you realize that life was made to be lived and enjoyed? Gee, you gotta live leisurely, enjoy the finer things in life. You shouldn't be a slave, a man to his bank account. Remember, money isn't everything.
Don't applaud, folks. You might wake him up.
Mary.
Well, hello you.
Al, this is Mary Livingston.
Hello, Al.
Mary, what a beautiful name. And what a beautiful girl to go with it.
Oh, Al, I didn't think you were still interested in girls.
Listen, honey, baby, let me tell you something. A man never gets too old to be interested in girls.
Say, that's the best news I've heard today.
Phil, please.
Huh? Wait a minute. Aren't you Phil Harris?
Yes, sir. That's me.
How do you like that? He admits it yet.
Nothing bothers him. Now, Mary, Phil, please sit down. You know, Al, it's hard to think of any two fellas in show business who have as much in common as we two.
You're right, Jack, and that goes for radio, vaudeville, Broadway shows, and the movies.
Yeah, take movies, for instance. We both worked for Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You made Sonny Boy, which was nearly their first talkie.
And you made The Horn Blows at Midnight, which was nearly their last one.
You like that.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, I apologize. I mean, it was one of the more recent ones.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah, 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 yeah. Well, look, oh, it's amazing, though, Al, how our careers are so closely associated.
I think so.
I mean, few people realize that you were the very first man to encourage me and help me up the ladder of success. I remember it clearly. It was in 1922. I wasn't working. You were a big-time star. And you met me and you slapped me on the back and said, "Son, don't worry, you'll make good." And then you gave me a dollar to get a meal.
That was 25 years ago. How about giving it back?
Well, I didn't return that dollar because I thought it was a good luck omen. And I decided to pass it on to some other poor struggling actor who might need encouragement.
Well, I'm glad you didn't keep the dollar. Tell me, Jack, who'd you give it to?
Well, first I had my eye on a nice young kid named Eddie Cantor. Now, he was very talented.
Look, I just came here to sing. Don't antagonize me.
Oh.
So he gave the dollar to Eddie Cantor.
Well, you see, at that time, Eddie Cantor was engaged to marry a girl named Ida. But by the time I decided to give him the dollar...
He had a wife and five kids. I don't know.
Only three.
All right, Jack. Who did you finally give the dollar to?
Well, you've heard of Bing Crosby, haven't you?
Heard of him. We go around together on the same turntables.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, well, what happened with Crosby?
Well, I noticed he looked hungry, so I walked up to him, slapped him on the back, and said, "Kid, how about a dollar?" And he gave it to me. Anyway, Al, I didn't know where to turn next.
But, Jack, there were other struggling youngsters who could have used that lucky dollar. Fellas like Danny Kaye, Bob Hope, Ronald Coleman, Hugo Carmichael, Jimmy Durante, Daryl Zanuck, Clark Gable, and Menasha Skolnick.
Menasha Skolnick?
Yeah, he's a star of Finkelstein's Rainbow. You know that show,
Ben. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, all those actors seemed to struggle to the top without my help. And so against my finer instincts, I kept your lucky dollar. And now it'll always be with me.
I know. You had it melted down and shot in your arm.
Yeah. Well, Al is getting on towards the end of the program, and I was wondering, well, perhaps you'd like to sing a song.
You know, folks, this kid doesn't listen to radio much.
Well, then you would like to sing, eh?
Well, certainly. That's why I brought my music over. Here, look at it.
Well, this is a swell song. Come on, Al, let's hear it.
Okay, but who'll accompany me?
Phil Harris's orchestra.
Give me back my music.
What?
Hey, wait a minute, Jolie. I heard that remark, and I don't like anyone casting aspirins at my band.
That's his person.
For his band is aspirins, I've heard of.
Oh, yeah? Hey, listen, what's wrong with my band?
What's wrong?
Come on, what's wrong with my band?
Oh, Phil, don't be so sensitive.
Well, I don't care. Everyone who comes on this trip has to insult my band, and I'm not going to stand for it anymore. I won't. Alice, I won't. I'm just not going to stand for it anymore.
I don't have
to stand for it.
Al, you've hurt Phil's feelings. Say something nice to him.
Something nice?
Yeah.
Bourbon.
Thanks, pal.
Phil, stop kissing him. Come on, Al. Everybody's waiting to hear you sing, huh?
Okay, Jackson, stand back.
Oh, April shower. Come your way, they bring the flowers that bloom in May. And if it's raining, have no regrets, because it isn't raining rain, you know, it's raining violets. And where you see clouds upon the hills, you soon will see crowds of daffodils. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come along. Oh, April showers may come your way.
they bring the flowers that bloom in May. So if it's raining, have no regrets, because it isn't raining, rain, you know, it's raining violets. And when you see clouds, when you see clouds on the hills, look, look, they're not clouds, no, no. They're crowds of daffodils. So keep on looking for a bluebird and listening for its song. Whenever April showers come
the script away and have another song.
Okay, Jack. What the... What do you want?
You made me love you.
I always did.
You did? Well, let's have it.
Hit it, boys. Hit it. Take it.
You made me love you. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. You made me want to. And all the time you knew it. I guess you always knew it. You made me happy sometimes. Or you made me sad. But there were times, baby.
Oh, you dog.
You made me cry, Pa. I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want to tell you. I want some love. That's true. You know I do. Indeed I do. Yes, I do. Gimme, 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 gimme what I cry for. You know you got the kind of kisses that I'd die for. You know you made me love you.
Say a few words in behalf of the United States Coast Guard, which is again accepting men between the ages of 17 and 25, or veterans up to 35. Many opportunities are available in the technical fields of electronics and aviation. So if any of you men are interested, call your nearest Coast Guard recruiting officer. He's listed in the directory under U.S. Government Treasury Department. Thank you. Jack will be back in just a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Kenny Delmar and Al Jolson for appearing on my program tonight. Al, you sang great, and thanks very much.
Thanks, Jack, but how about my check?
Look, you just came over to sing. Don't antagonize me. Huh? Ladies and gentlemen, on Wednesday we'll be opening at the Roxy Theater here in New York. Next Sunday will be our last broadcast of the season, when Dennis Day will be back with us, and our guest star will be America's greatest pause for station identification, Fred Allen. Say, Jolie, will you excuse me a minute? I promise I'd drop in next door on the Phil Harris program. They might need me over there.
Jack, they need you like a moose needs a hat rack.
Hey, you heard that on my program.
No, some fella named Norman Krasner told it to me.
Oh, yes, yes, he loves it. Good night.
Good night, Jack.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The
Black Male and Queens Focus Group is a social network that challenges the perspectives related to the academics of black students. It is a niche where those who choose to participate can express themselves and can be helpful to one's academic success. The group is open to all HFC students. You can join their meetings in person in Building 9, or you can join their meetings online via Zoom. For more information, go to hfcc.edu/bmqfg. Visit the website hfcc.edu/bmqfg.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma, not at birth.
With macular degeneration, you lose your central vision.
You have a blind spot right in the center of your face, so I can't actually see your face.
So even that little circle in which I could see became a big blur.
I was 65 when I first was diagnosed with glaucoma.
There were no symptoms. I had no headaches.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
You lose mobility, independence, changes your entire life.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
My husband tells me that I have beautiful brown eyes, and I don't want to lose that.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
The Jack Benny Program, transcribed. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Williams. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Jack Benny will do another of his TV programs over the CBS network. However, let's turn back the clock to early morning and go out to Jack's home in Beverly Hills.
Good morning, Rochester.
Oh, good morning, milkman. Easy with those bottles. Mr. Benny is still asleep.
Okay, here's your order. The milk, cream, butter, and eggs.
Thanks. By the way, when you came up the walk, did you see any sign of our parrot?
No. Why?
Every year when it gets close to Thanksgiving, she gets scared and hides from us.
No, I didn't see her. Well, I gotta be going.
Goodbye. See you tomorrow.
Oh, say, Rochester.
Yeah?
Doesn't Mr. Benny do another of his television shows tonight?
Uh-huh. That's why I'm letting him sleep so late. You know, doing radio and television is quite a strain, even for a man of 39.
Who are you trying to kid? You've been saying Mr. Benny is 39 for years.
I know, and I'll keep right on saying until I get a better offer from some other comedian.
I see what you mean. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, I better put this stuff in the refrigerator. So that's where you've been hiding. Gosh, look at the shiver. Polly, how do you feel?
Oh, baby, it's cold outside.
Oh, God, Polly. This is the second time you've hidden in the refrigerator. Here, let me take you out of there. I better give you something to keep you from catching cold. Let's see. What's good for that? Maybe some cognac. Or hot milk. Yeah, I'll give you some hot milk.
Cognac.
Into your dish.
Good morning, Rochester.
Good morning, Mr. Benny. I'll have your breakfast in just a minute.
Oh, that's fine. I'm really hungry.
Won't take long. I let you sleep a little later because you're doing your TV show tonight.
You know, I'm glad you did, Rochester, because I had the same dream again.
The one where you were locked in the California bank?
Yeah. I counted wanted all the money. The fives, tens, twenties, fifties, hundreds, and $1,000 bills. And finally, the total was $7,349,560. Boy, what a relief.
Why?
The night before, I was $2 short. Gosh, the dream was so real.
It must have been. Wash the green off your hands and have your breakfast.
Okay. Hello, Polly.
Hello.
Rochester. What's the matter with Polly?
Oh, it's a long story. She's starting to catch a cold, so I gave her a little cognac.
Cognac? Why didn't you give her bourbon?
I can't stand it when she's got whiskey on her breath.
Well, take good care of her while I'm at the studio. You know, I won't want anything to happen. I'll get it. Coming, coming. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello.
How you feeling, kid?
Fine.
What's new?
Nothing.
Well, what'd you come over here for?
Say goodbye. I'm running away from home.
Not again. Always runs away from home. Dennis, does your mother know you're running away from home?
It was her idea.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Another fight with your mother, huh?
Uh-huh.
What happened this time?
Well, we were all sitting around the dinner table laughing and having a good time, and then suddenly she lost her temper when I mentioned August 14th, 1924.
Well, what happened that day?
That's when I was born.
Oh, and as soon as you mentioned your birthday, she hit you, huh?
Yeah, but she hit my father first.
Kid, why don't you...
Oh, Mr. Benny!
What is it, Rochester?
Your breakfast is ready.
Okay, I'll be right there. Dennis, have you had your breakfast yet?
No.
Why don't you run out and get some while I'm having mine? It won't take long.
Mr. Benny, when I heard Mr. Day come in, I prepared breakfast for him, too.
Oh. Well, Dennis, how about joining me?
Oh, no, thanks. I'm not hungry.
But, Dennis, you told me you haven't had your breakfast.
I know.
Then how come you're not hungry?
I just had lunch.
Look, Dennis, if you weren't going to run away and you were going to be on the program next Sunday, you'd sing a song, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's hear it now. Always running away.
Silver song.
Yes, that old song was fine. I know it'll be wonderful on the program next Sunday.
What do you mean next Sunday? I'm running away today.
I know, but while you were singing it, I recorded it.
Gee, for an old man, you don't miss a trick, do you?
Look, Dennis, will you please leave me alone? I don't want to be aggravated because I'm supposed to do my television show today.
Oh, your TV show? Who's going to be your guest star?
Johnny Ray.
When your sweetheart sends a letter of goodbye.
Now cut that out.
It's no secret.
Dad, stop.
Gee, you're jumpy. You think it was you who was running away from home.
Dennis, why don't you stop?
Mr. Benny, Polly's still sneezing. Shall I call the drugstore and have them send over some medicine?
The drugstore? Now call up a veterinarian and have him come right over.
But boss, that vet charges a lot of money for home visits.
So what? You know where to send the bill. What are you laughing at?
If the Blue Cross ever finds out that Polly Benny isn't your daughter, you're in trouble. Anyway, Polly doesn't need a vet. She just has a little cold.
Oh, say, Mr. Benny, can I use your phone?
The phone? Yes, Dennis. Go ahead.
Thanks. I want to call TWA. I'm going to get on a plane and go as far
now,
away
wait a minute,
as I can.
Wait a minute, Dennis. Wait a minute. This has gone far enough. Now, you pick up that phone and call your mother and tell her that you're sorry and that you're not going to run away from home.
But, Mr. Benny...
Do as I say. Now, call your mother.
Okay.
Silly kid. Just before Thanksgiving, treating his mother like that.
Hello, Mother. This is Dennis. Your son. I'm over at Mr. Benny's. Uh-huh. He wanted me to call you and tell you I'm sorry and that I'm not going to run away from home. What? Okay, goodbye, Mother.
What'd she say?
She said for you to mind your own business.
Well, I don't care what she said. You're still not going to run away from home. And take that...
I'll get it, Mr. Benny.
Okay.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wilson.
Hello, Rochester. Mr. Benny up yet?
Up and assembled. He's in the den.
Oh, thanks. Well, hi, Jack. Hello, Dennis.
Oh, hello, Don.
Hello, Don. I thought I'd see you at the studio.
I know, but I came over here first. I want to see you about a rather personal matter.
What is it?
Well, can I talk to you privately? It's a little confidential.
Well, don't mind me. Tomorrow I'll be in Pakistan.
Dennis, keep quiet. Now, what is this personal matter, Don?
Well, I've broached this subject to you before. It's just this. I don't like all the jokes you make about my size.
But, Don...
Oh, it wasn't so bad on radio, because there the listeners couldn't see me. You can even do the same jokes about a skinny person.
Well, then what's your complaint?
Now you're doing them on television, and with me standing there, people can see I'm a big tub of blubber.
Don, I'm sorry.
Just being sorry is not enough, Jack. I'd like you to take that joke out of today's script.
Which joke?
The one where you say to me, Don, are those your chins or are you chewing on a Venetian blind?
Don, it's a wonderful joke and I made it up.
I don't care. I want it out.
Well... must be loaded. Brother, you're rich when you can talk to me like that. Okay, Don, I didn't know you were... Excuse me, Don. Hello?
Hello, Jack. This is Bob Crosby.
Oh, Bob. Bob, what is it?
Well, Jack, I'm kind of worried. You see, Frank Remley has disappeared.
No.
Yeah. He's been gone for a couple of weeks now, and I'm getting more and more upset.
Did you report his disappearance to the police?
I went there last night.
Well, did you give the police a good description of Frankie?
Oh, I didn't have to. They got his picture, fingerprints, and baby shoes.
Baby shoe? Didn't Remley have them bronzed?
Yes, and he used them for brass knuckles.
No kidding.
But, Jack, this could be serious.
You're right. Maybe Frankie has amnesia and has forgotten who he is.
Well, I'm not worried about that. You see, he carries an identification tag with his name, address, and also his blood type.
Oh, I didn't... What is Frankie's blood type?
Old Crow.
Well, that I should have known. Now, look, Bob. Don't worry about Frankie. He'll turn up. Unfortunately, he always does.
Well, I hope so. So long, Jack.
Goodbye, Bob. Oh, wait a minute.
Yes, Jack?
Bob, I almost forgot. I want to invite you over to my house for Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, gee, thanks. My wife will be so happy.
Oh, your wife? Oh, yes, she's invited, too.
And, Jack, you know, it's traditional for parents to take their children with them for Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, the children?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You have five, don't you?
Yes, five.
Well, save your car. It's not far to Thrifty's. Goodbye, Bob.
Jack, I hope I'm invited over for Thanksgiving dinner, too.
Well, of course you are, Don.
Good, good. There's nothing I love better than turkey.
I'm going to have chow mein on Thanksgiving.
Chow mein?
Sure, by then I'll be in Hong Kong.
Dennis, will you please be quiet? Now, who can that be?
Oh, it's probably the Sportsman Quartet, Jack. I told them to meet me here.
Oh.
Come in! Well, hello, fellas.
When are they going to learn to talk? Don, why are the boys carrying those pistols?
Show him, fellas.
Now, what's that?
It's a wonderful sound effect we're going to use in the commercial we're going to do on the show.
What is it?
Ricochet Romance.
Oh, and they use the guns?
Go ahead, show him, fellas.
They warned me when you kissed me, your love would ricochet. Your lips would find another, and your heart would go astray. I thought that I could hold you with all my manly charms, but then one day you ricocheted to someone else's arms. And baby, I don't want a ricochet romance. I don't want a ricochet love. If you're careless with your kisses, find another turtle dove. I can't live on ricochet romance. No, no, not me. If you're gonna ricochet, baby, I'm gonna set you free. I knew the day I met you, you had a roving eye. I thought that I could hold you. What a fool I was to try. You promised you'd be faithful and you would never stray. Then like a rifle bullet, you began to ricochet. But baby, I don't want a ricochet romance. I don't want a ricochet love. You and me are through forever. Find another turtle dove. Thanks for all those gifts you gave me.
Well, Don, I know it'll be great on the show.
Thanks, Jack. Well, I gotta run along. Can I drop you anyplace, Dennis?
Not unless you're passing Funafuti.
Passing where? Dennis, go with her, will you? Go, go, go.
Mr. Benny!
What?
You better get going to the studio or you'll be late for your television show.
Oh, yes, I better hurry. Well, I'll see you later.
Okay. So long, boys.
Goodbye. You know, Rochester, I'm kind of nervous. I hope I have a funny television show today.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that, boss. The minute you come on the stage, the audience will start laughing and screaming. You can't miss.
What makes you so sure?
You forgot to put on your pants.
I'll be darned. I almost did TV in my BVDs. Rochester, get me my trousers. I have to hurry to the studio.
Yes, sir.
Gee, these new cars are sensational. Power steering, windows go up when you press a button, a classy horn. Gee, I'm sure glad I waited for a 1954 Cadillac. Yes, sir. Aren't very many of these on the road yet. Well, here's Television City. Thanks for the lift, mister. Well, I better go in.
Good afternoon, Mr. Benny.
Well, Mac, what are you doing here? You used to be the doorman over at the radio studio.
Yep, but they transferred me here to Television City.
Oh, yeah. Say, Mac, is the makeup man in?
Yes, sir. And your guest star, Johnny Ray, is here, too.
Good, good. See you later.
Oh, say, Mr. Benny.
Yes, Mac.
Mr. Benny, how long ago was it that you held the I Can't Stand Jack Benny contest?
Well, we finished that 8 years ago.
Well, you ought to make an announcement on your program. We keep getting about 500 letters a week.
Well, at least they're listeners. They couldn't hate me if they weren't. Yeah. See you later. Dum-dum-dum-dum, ricochet romance. Dum-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-dum-dee. Gee, Television City is certainly beautiful. It's got the latest style architecture. The architects put in all the latest improvements. Electric eyes, sliding walls, thermostatic air conditioning, indirect lighting, complete soundproofing. Luckily, there's a gas station on the corner. They forgot the washrooms. Thum-thum-thum, to ricochet romance. Thum-thum-thum-thum-thum. I wonder where my director is. Oh, stagehand.
Yes, Mr. Benny?
Have you seen Mr. Ralph Levy, my director?
Yeah, there he is with the camera crew.
Oh, yes. Oh, Mr. Levy. Mr. Levy.
Here I am, Jack.
Mr. Levy, I understand you have some things you want to discuss with me before I go on.
Oh, yes, Jack. It's just a minor thing. But whenever you start a television show and you're out on the stage by yourself, I notice you always keep putting your hands in your hip pocket. This can be very distracting.
Well, I'm sorry, Ralph. It's a habit.
Jack, you're out there alone. Your money's safe.
Okay, I'll watch it. Now, Ralph, there are a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about.
What's that?
Well, some people told me that when they saw me on television during my last show that I looked kind of old, and they even detected a few wrinkles in my face. Now, why is that?
Well, it's very simple, Jack. You see, you know you're 39, and I know you're 39. It's just the camera that's so stupid.
Excuse me, you say, Mr. Levy, should I get the scenery set?
Yeah, Joe, and Harry, move those lights a little closer. Dick Fisher, tell the cameraman to stand by.
Oh, say, Ralph, wait a minute. We're not doing a murder mystery on the show tonight, are we?
Of course not.
Then why is that body lying there?
I don't know. It's been there since we did our last TV show.
Oh, excuse me.
Hello.
Hello, Bob. I found him.
Well, Mr. Levy, it's time for dress rehearsal.
Okay, Joe. Everybody stand by. Ready, Jack?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, Jack, I almost forgot.
What?
Before you came here, I timed the show again, and we were 3 minutes too long. So I cut out the scene where you play the violin solo.
Now, wait a minute, Ralph. You can't cut that scene.
I had to. I told you. We were 3 minutes long.
Well, we'll cut something else. You're not taking out my violin solo.
Jack, I'm the director, and I think it's best for the show. The violin is out, and that's final.
Well, it's not final. I'm going over your head to the producer.
I'm the producer, too.
Oh, yes, I forgot. The producer and the director. Who Whose idea was it you should hold down two jobs?
Yours. You wanted to save the money.
Well, I don't care if you are the producer and the director. I'm the star, and I say my violin solo stays in.
And I say it comes out.
I say it stays in. Ralph, that big light fell from way up there on that platform, almost hit me. How could an accident like that happen?
That was no accident. It's amazing what you can do when you're the producer and director.
I don't care. We're going to do it my way. All right, we'll do it your way.
That's better.
Well, I'll go to my dressing room and change.
Hey, Mr. Levy.
What is it, Joe?
You were right. He's chicken.
I will be back in a minute to tell you about my show, which goes on immediately after this program on the CBS television network with my guest star, Johnny Ray. Ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned before, tonight I'm doing my TV show on the CBS network, and my guest star will be Johnny Ray. And we're going to... Excuse me. Hello? Oh, Johnny. Are you a television city? You aren't? Well, where are you? On the corner of... What are you doing there? Oh, you're waiting for a 1954 Cadillac, too. Well, get here as soon as you can. Goodbye, Johnny. Good night, folks. See you in 30 seconds.
The show tonight was written by Milt Josephsberg, John Packerberry, Hal Goldman, Al Gordon, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
Coming to the Black Box Theater at Henry Ford College, Gruesome Playground Injuries, Rajiv Joseph's tale of friendship, wounds, and healing. Follow these childhood friends over the course of 30 years as they compare the scars and calamities that keep drawing them together. Due to strong language and frank conversations about difficult topics, audience discretion is advised. Come join Kayleen and Doug for a story of injuries, the scars they leave, and the stories we gain. The play runs April 18th through the 26th here at Henry Ford College on Evergreen Road in Dearborn. Tickets are now on sale through the college website, hfcc.edu. For more information, call 313-845-6478. That's 313-845-6478.
Hi, I'm David Twitchell, host of We Are Not Alone, which airs the first Monday of each month right here on WHFR. We interview scientists and ufologists from around the country and around the world about the UFO-UAP phenomenon. We Are Not Alone has been a staple on WHFR since 2007, and since the Pentagon, Navy, and Air Force have all admitted to the UAP reality, the show's content has become even more prevalent. So join me, David Twitchell, the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. on WHFR. We are not alone.
All right, thank you, David Twitchell, and friends here at Henry Ford College. Well, that's just about going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault Extravaganza. Thanks, as always, for hanging with us, and we'll do it again in a week. Don't forget, if you like the mysteries, the detective shows, the the occasional scary show, especially around Halloween. You do that on Sunday night, right here on WHFR. Sunday night between 9 and 12 midnight. Or if you want more lighthearted drama, variety, the comedies, we'll talk to you in about a week with more of the same. The show is called Radio Vault. And we thank you for all your pledges that keep this show on the air and many, many other innovative shows, local musicians, as well as from around the world, right here at 89.3 WHFR.FM. Up and coming in just a matter of moments, we have on tap an encore presentation of Mountain Stage just for you. Thank you. Once again, we are going to make way for Mountain Stage here in a moment. Thanks for hanging out with us for Radio Vault. We'll do it again in a week, 10 o'clock in the morning till 1. See ya. Trailways bus out of Louisiana. One hot summer July is 103. No air conditioning on the bus. How did I keep cool? I had a fan from the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Every time I go home, the pastor said, you didn't have to take my church fan all the way to Detroit. My show is called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Wednesday. We do the blues, and we got blues you can use.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
There's a spring in the mountain. It flows down to the town.
From NPR Music and produced by West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support provided by Bailey Glasser. Welcome to another Mountain Stage with our host, Kathy Matea.
There's a song in my heart, just a simple little tune. But the rhythm and the melody won't leave me alone. Around the world, it's just a simple song. This world is turning round. Simple song.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello, and welcome once again to Mountain Stage, live performance radio from the Mountain State of West Virginia. I'm Kathy Matea, and we are at our home, the Culture Center Theater in Charleston, West Virginia. We're happy to be with you and happy you joined us out there on the radio.